Hello! Welcome to a very special interview edition of the MSPA podcast, even though this is nothing to do with MSPA. It's just an excuse.
Yeah, pretty much. It was Lang's idea.
We are here with Madman, me, and Tarn Adams, the creator of Dwarf Fortress. Say hello, Tarn
Adams. Hey guys, how's it going?
So, for those of you who don't know what Dwarf Fortress is, go listen to the last podcast, because we mentioned it there. Yeah.
Very briefly.
It's a game, and there are dwarves, and they're made of text.
They're not made of text. They have their own little, like, happy image. The deer are made of text. They are a deer.
Isn't that a dog?
No, they're different colors. See, there was a funny story one time when I mistook one of my dogs for a deer. Yeah, that was good. Anyways. Yeah, I was wondering why my hunter was chasing this dog, and then he killed him, and I was like, oh, God. Anyways, not a big deal.
He just kills his own dog.
Yeah, I don't know, whatever.
So, Tarn, what is the most recent thing you've done to Dwarf Fortress?
The most recent thing I've been working on is the rewrite for the squad controls. I guess yesterday I finished up the movement, so that you can, because everything is completely different, now, because I've been working on this version for, almost a year now, 9 months, and, so we've got new positions. You can assign a militia commander and then as many militia captains as you want, and they'll be leading your squads now. And the squads can be given orders. It's really just starting up. I'm gonna go through that this month and maybe a bit next month as well, but right now I've just got them moving around again. But they'll follow the order to move to a location independent of what their captain is actually doing. So instead of going over, like if the captain stubbed his toe and went to go rest in a bed, they used to all go follow him there and just kind of huddle around him. But
are you okay,
but
Kevin?
Not, but
you
yeah,
toe,
yeah,
it might fall off.
Yeah, that was sad. And they'd follow him, you know, I guess whenever he took a break to go eat or drink or whatever. So yeah, they were all just brown nosing or something. But now they'll do their jobs now. I mean, they're probably going to be, you know, penalties if the leader's not around, especially if you've been training to use formations and things, which are going to come up. But right now they're moving, and tonight I'm planning to get kill orders up and say defense of an activity zone, perhaps, so that you can have them try and kill anything that comes into a certain area, so you can have them guard places. And then I'll be moving on to scheduling for them, so that you don't have to kind of babysit them all the time. So that you could schedule different orders for different times, including standing down or training or sorting out their equipment, that kind of thing. And hopefully it's all easy enough so that you don't really have to micro everything. But yeah, I'm not really sure how it's going to end up. I mean, the interface is always bad enough, so it should be better than last time anyway. You shouldn't have to activate squads anymore, for instance, just to kind of activate and deactivate. It should all happen according to the orders that you've given the squad overall, so that if you put a person into a squad or take them out, they'll just start doing everything that squad needs to do, and the orders exist independent of the dwarves, so that you don't have to worry about redoing orders for people if you slip them in and out of squads. So it should all work out pretty well, but just like everything, it's going a little slower than expected. So, fortunately, it's also the last big thing. So
yeah. So will this only be for dwarf squads, or will like goblins also have some sort of order in the future?
So the squad definition itself is set up so that it's completely independent from dwarf mode. They just sit off by themselves, and then they get linked into the civilizations, and your dwarf fortress itself has a site civilization or a site entity linked to it, and it uses those linkages. So the idea is that in sieges that come to attack you, I'm not sure about this version, of course, but sieges that come to attack you, can have squad link-ups. Anything you find in adventure mode can have squad link-ups. Your adventurers' companions themselves could have a squad link-up so that you could order your guys to arrange themselves in certain ways and use whatever mechanics the squad has to get them to act. Your adventurer, in order to do that, they need to be linked up to an entity, which is another thing that's coming up at some point here, so that you'd have your own entity. You could call yourself some group. At first, it would probably just be so that people could refer to you as the Notorious Bandits that go around killing everybody. But you'd also be able to do site linkages then. You could have your people help you build a little house or whatever, a little fortress for yourselves, and then operate out of there, have items that you can put there without having them scattered all over the place, and just go on from there. So that's all coming up for the release after this one. And when I say release after this one, I mean series of releases, because I'm going to try my best not to have any long delays anymore, because this is taxing in numerous ways how this one turned out.
Yeah.
The fact that it's probably going to be more than a year in between releases, it's caused a lot of people to stop supporting the project, and it's just been overall a pain. But so the next series of releases are going to address probably start the improving sieges. So that they actually, if I don't get them using squad stuff now, at least they'll use it then. And they'll also just program in solutions for them to crack any of the current fortresses that are around, especially in terms of things like cheap stuff like traps that you can just kind of spam a hallway with four or five of them, and then it acts like a meat grinder. That shouldn't happen after I fix that up. And then the other things I'll be working on are getting the adventure mode skills up, and then moving on to those adventure entities, and then also there's the top 10 suggestions list, and that has most of the things that people have voted for on that. That's over on our forums in the suggestions forum. People can vote on they can put up a suggestion and then vote for their favorite three, and so the top 10 there, I'm going to at least look at them. They're all most of them are kind of dealing with the basic problems of the game, like hauling is annoying, or I want jobs to be prioritized, or I want to be able to make things with specific materials and so on. So I'm going to go through those and handle the ones that I can do.
Make walls out of syrup.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing that always got me was the dwarven syrup roast. That's probably the best thing anybody's ever cooked.
Yeah, I guess, well, that would just be kind of like a big caramelized glob of sugar, right?
It's like a pancake, but it's also the syrup itself.
And then you roast it.
You don't even have to put syrup on it. It's just made of syrup.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, the cooking revamp is something that's planned, so that you'd need to have some kind of base to work with, unless you're making a soup, like some kind of shake or something. But that's not one of the things that made the top 10. So we'll have to. I mean, there are things I want to do. I mean, that was one of the things I wanted to do. Of course, I hadn't had time to cook for myself too much recently. That was back when I was cooking for myself, when I was back in Texas in my math job. And that's when that suggestion made it onto the bloats, because I was thinking more of that at the time. But we'll see. There's just so much to do. I want to do that, though, because it's kind of stupid how it is now. It is one of those glaring defects that they can just grab some seeds in a barrel of beer and make a roast.
Syrup roast.
Or biscuits. They make biscuits if they just grab one piece of syrup and one piece of beer, mix it together, make some kind of alcoholic caramel biscuit or something.
It's horrible.
That'd be interesting, actually.
It's gonna get spattered in their beards. Pretty nasty.
Well, that's where the soap makers come in handy, right?
Yeah, no, you might, there's going to be a use for soap, I think, in the next version, which is going to be intriguing, but, because when they do surgeries, they're going to want to use a soap to clean off the big fat dwarven bellies before they chop them open or whatever, but, Actually, there's no surgeries on the belly as far as I know. They're mostly going to be fixing brakes. Fixing, what was that? Fixing brakes and so on. If there's a, because you'll have to put compound fractures into traction on the traction bench, and then which is actually an ancient thing. We're not doing anachronisms here in terms of the time limits we've set up for ourselves. The Romans and Greeks had all these crazy things that we're gonna sort of dwarfify and put in the game.
So can you make walls out of soap? Because that's what I want to do.
Walls out of soap. Now, soap has to... right now, I think the only restriction is that a wall needs to be made out of a block. And a soap might be a bar. So I think you'd have to be able to turn a bar into a block. Now, I don't know if it's true in this version, but next...
So if it's a bar, can't you, make soap armor?
The restriction there, I think... is that it's going to depend on the workshop you go to, and since that'd be the metalsmith's workshop, they'd just check for the metal flag, and they check against the brittle flag, and they check against the can-be-made-into-armor flag. Now things are going to be diversified a little bit coming up here. There's the alchemist's workshop is being opened up, which is where you make soap. That's all it's for right now. It might as well be called the soap maker's workshop. That's going to be opened up to the reaction raws and the TXT files in the... In the raw folder, so you'd be able to add a reaction to turn soap bars into soap blocks if you wanted to, and then you could make buildings out of soap. I know you might be able to do that now, but since you have to do it at the smelter, it'd be kind of strange.
I always like making fortresses out of blocks of water.
Yeah, that's just that should be fixed the next version too. That's just a problem with the material states not being recognized by the item, the block item. So hopefully that'll all be fixed, and I'll actually call it ice in the next version. So you'll actually be making things out of blocks of ice. But that's what they are. They actually are ice blocks.
Yeah.
But yeah. So no, it should be good. There are lots of things getting cleaned up, but of course there's also going to be like a million new bugs to come out of this, and coupled with the materials and tissue layers and all that kind of thing, there should be horrifying bugs that come out of this.
Yeah, that's half the fun.
Yeah. Right now, the dogs, for instance, they don't start with back legs, and I don't know why. All the quadrupeds, they start without their back legs, and so you start the game, and you've got your dwarves standing around the wagon, and then all of these dogs and cats, and they're all flashing the mortally wounded symbol or whatever, or heavily wounded symbol. And they're just crawling around. It's kind of creepy. It's a Hellraiser or something, but those things that kind of crawl around. But it's just going to be some problem with the raw definitions. But the raw definitions, of course, are a little more complicated now, so I have to kind of go and debug these body detail plans that tell the game how to flesh out a quadruped with tissues and so on. I must have just missed some tissue or something, but...
Oh yeah. One thing I wanted to ask you was, how was this year's get together?
The get together was great. There were a lot of people there. There was something like at the peak, there were almost 30 people at the Pike's Place Brewery, and we had four tables and people sitting around playing games. And
that's far more than 12.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it really stepped up. We were thinking, you know, if this release comes off in a few months, people, you know, continue to play the game and it goes well, and I can put in some more interesting things in subsequent releases. Hopefully, maybe a few of them directed toward actually retaining players. like, how do you play this game? You know, can this game possibly, you know, look, you know, slightly graphical in a way that doesn't chase off, you know, 90% of the people or whatever, as we're currently losing some number of them like that right now that download it. And, you know, if that were to happen, then, you know, we wouldn't even be able to hold a get-together in a restaurant anymore.
Just be like one guy. It's like, I love Dwarf Fortress.
Yeah, it would have been canceled, probably. I mean, We had like 20 people sign up for the first one, and 12 people came. So, This time the rate, I think the rate of retention was a lot higher. Like most of the people that signed up showed up because we had more threads in advance and so on, and so people started carpooling and so on like that, and taking trains together and stuff. So there was kind of a reinforcement effect there, I think, that got more people to show up rather than everyone going independently. Some people just might decide not to go or forget or whatever. But yeah, who knows what we're doing next year. It's going to take more organization. If we have more than, say, 35 people sign up, we wouldn't be able to get a reservation anymore.
Yeah.
So, but we'll adapt to it. I mean, if we have to, people are suggesting things like hotels, like a floor in a hotel or something, and then you'd have to have everyone pay like $10 or $15 or something to show up. And yeah, who knows? I mean, it's too bad we don't have more money in the pot or whatever, so that we could finance things like that. But it's just not practical for us to pay for stuff like that. As it stands, when I'm just about breaking even on rent and food every month or whatever.
Oh, speaking of graphics, the first thing you see when you start up Dwarf Fortress is that wonderful little starting animation. How long did that take?
Yeah, because I forgot how many frames. It's got like 200 frames or something. And I drew them all from scratch. Now, of course, a lot of the frames are similar, and you can kind of copy paste them. Like the one the guy's just standing there hitting the thing with the pick. All I redrew was the pick, pretty much moving in his arms. He doesn't really get his legs into it or anything, right? but it didn't take that long because I had set up a painting utility. I use the mouse for a lot of it. There's this painting utility. The painting utility, I think, is still embedded in Dwarf Fortress. It's just kind of not compiled into the released version. But you just paint it frame by frame, and it only took, I mean, it took a few hours or something. And I had some experience with that utility from Liberal Crime Squad, which has some little movies and stuff. So it was pretty fast to set up. I don't really have any plans for other movies. I wonder if the Dwarf Fortress needs cutscenes or something. But
beyond quality.
That's right. That's our motto because, I mean, it's kind of a
you're
it's
too
kind
good
of a,
for quality.
Yeah. That's what it means. It's
too
it's,
good
it's,
for simple adjectives.
But yeah, in a sense, it's supposed to refer to the fact that, you know, at least to a small group of people, the overall game is really cool. But also it's that we haven't really bothered with polishing our games at all. In that sense, we're beyond quality.
I never thought of that. Infinite.
We're too good for quality. What are you talking about?
Wait.
So, I have been reading through some of the community games recently, and then I remembered Boat Murdered, so I went and read it again, and that's just brilliant, isn't it? Boat Murdered.
Yeah, no, it's a great it's a great story, and it's a great way for people to get into the game. There's, like, I don't know, some non-trivial proportion of the people that got into Dwarf Fortress got into it because they read that story. It was cool how all that came together. Even though, I mean, if people play the game now expecting to see elephants act the way they did in that story, then they're going to get carped by surprise. Because elephants are all docile now. But, and then carp are only nerfed in the next version because they don't have giant biting fangs that can rip off your leg instantly or whatever, and they'll just kind of gum on you now. So I don't know what the next triumphant monster will be. It could be the large ones again, because you don't get. It takes into account size a little bit more now when you hack at something, so you can't really do
It'll be the groundhog, I bet you.
It's possible. You never know. You never know, especially if I screw up the raws or something. I remember there was a whole release where horses were made out of iron. because as I was testing out the material thing. Now, this was before the tissue, but you could still kind of put material properties as you could with, the bronze colossus or something.
Yeah.
You could put material property, like one material, you could put those properties onto the creature. And so when I was testing that out, like the melting points and stuff, I thought it would be funny to make the horse out of iron because it's like a train or whatever, the iron horse. And so I made it out of iron. And there's also the Iron Horse restaurant in Seattle, formerly at least. And so I made the horse out of iron, and I just forgot to take it out. So there for a time, the horse was made out of iron. And so this time, yeah, who knows? Because there's so many numbers that need to be set this time around, and I just went through and copy pasted so much, from the wolf I would copy paste the groundhog and so on, and then I just changed the numbers as I found them. But you know, if it wouldn't surprise me at all if in the next version the groundhog was the size of a wolf with wolf fang or something, or you know, maybe I had copied the elephant for the groundhog or whatever. So there's going to be huge amounts of problems. I'm just going to be able to catch the big ones like the legs, for instance. That's going to be fixed before the next release, because right now the poor groundhogs are just kind of pawing around on their two front legs that could be the size of elephants. It's potentially all kinds of...
It could be one of the completely useless animals like the flies or the like the dragonfly.
Because those things all have body definitions now. Like in the Raws, in the current released version, they don't even have body definitions. But now every single creature has a body definition, and I don't even know if I had one for insects before, but I mean, it could be that I forgot all the vermin flags on those. I haven't seen giant flies kind of moving around during my testing, but you never know. Because the testing always misses a lot of things.
You should be able to tame them and make a fly circus.
Because right now you can tame cockroaches, right, and have them climb over your body. Because they'll take their pet cockroach and put it into their inventory, and then you look at their inventory, and it'll either say there's a cockroach on their left shoulder, a cockroach on their right shoulder, a cockroach on their head. It'll give the cockroach's name, and you can have more than one crawling around you. So, but as far as concerted acts of large groups of insects performing behaviors together, that's probably a later thing to be added rather than a nearer term thing. Unless I get off on some weird tangent as sometimes happens.
What is the point of the insects being there? Are they just there for no reason?
The point of like the flies and stuff?
Yeah, they just fly around and be annoying.
Well, they are annoying actually. If you look at the dwarves' thoughts, they get annoyed by flies. So if you set the people to fish at swamps or so on, now there's no way to combat that problem right now. And there have been some suggestions on the forum in terms of ancient forms of pest control and so on that you could use. Yeah, soap additives and stuff. Well, you put soap additives on, additives in the soap, so that when you wash with the soap, the flies and mosquitoes and things will stay away from you. But one of the main reasons, though, is just for atmosphere. I mean, if you look at a swamp and see flies buzzing around, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You see the turtles, you can see a turtle moving around in the swamp or whatever.
Speaking of atmosphere, what's the point of adventures? Being able to start fires. I mean, all it's for killing yourself at the moment, I think.
No, I don't remember if it was something somebody asked for or what, and it makes it easy for me to test the fire mechanics. Just go set a fire somewhere. But that was just on a lark. I don't remember if it was for somebody in particular.
I remember I was in adventure mode, and I was like, well, I'm going to go to sleep for the night, but what if I start a fire and just sort of lay next to that, and then I woke up...
Yeah, no, that would make too much sense.
And then I woke up, and it was like, you're blistering, you're burning, you're blistering, you're burning.
Yeah, no, there's no campfires right now, except for the ones that the Siegers set. So yeah, right now Adventure Mode has so little structure and nothing that really feels like progress or anything like that that, you know, I don't mind throwing in game.
Except for Genocide. That's always fun to be in Adventure Mode.
Yeah. No, getting the name of the age of the world to change because of your actions in Adventure Mode, I guess, is kind of the hallmark activity. Like getting it to change to the age of the humans because you killed everyone else.
Most recent thing that I did with Adventure Mode was I was in Dwarf Mode, and I went to a human town because it's always fun and you can just steal their buildings and sort of live there. I went to the temple and I just completely collapsed it, which lost me 2 people, but whatever. And then I went back in Adventure Mode and there was just this huge hole with all this limestone sitting around it. And there was my dead dwarf laying next to it, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah. It doesn't even advance time on the bodies, I think. So this guy was probably still fresh.
It's like, where's your high priest now?
Yeah, they should get angry about that stuff. That was another one of those things that people asked to be able to do, and I was like, you know, well, I'm not going to be able to update all the mechanics for it. You know, they aren't actually going to get pissed off at you or anything. And they're like, no, just let us do it. So they're like, all right. You know, I don't mind having that kind of lack of polish or whatever in the features as long as we're still marching toward the hypothetical version 1 where all of those things will hypothetically be dealt with. But that's not for several years, many years now.
Well, that's basically all I like to do when I'm in a human town is just collapse their buildings and take the materials because it's fun.
And then leave.
Because then when you go back in adventure mode, there's like nothing to do in the town because everything's collapsed. It's like, where's the high priest? Well, he's in that pit. You see somebody collapse the temple.
Yeah, no, they should try and kill you when you do things like that. And then if they fail, then they should become refugees and wander off in the wilds, and then you could go visit them in adventure mode, and they could tell a story about how the dwarves came.
Those damn dwarves stealing all our homes,
collapsing our temples.
Yeah, no, it'd be great then if you could then sort of lead those refugees on a mission of retribution.
Collapsing is so fun and like nonsensical at the moment because I'm starting a community game actually where it's called We Can Move Mountains, and the whole point is to collapse an entire mountain so that I can build a dwarven highway through it.
Wow.
We're just going to dig it out and then have it to the point where we can pull a lever and the whole mountain will just collapse on itself.
Yeah, I've got no idea when I'm going to fix that because it's really hard. I mean, the 7x7 thing back in the 2D version, any either of you guys were around during the 2D version?
I just recently got the last update before the Z-axis so that I could play through a boat murdered-esque sort of fort.
Yeah, then there's the cave-ins make a lot more sense there, and you've got kind of this 7x7 restriction where if you carve out a 7x7 square anywhere in your fortress, it'll collapse eventually. And that kind of thing is really difficult to do when you've got a 3D map because then you actually feel like you have to pay attention to the laws of nature and so on when you've got all these things stacked.
One of the funniest parts of that was when Stark Raving Mad was like, this thing is held up with matchsticks. I'm not going to go in there. It's just all these pillars.
Yeah. No, I'll fix it.
That lever that just flooded the siege workshop for no reason.
Yeah. Now, was this in Boat Murdered or?
Yeah.
Or
it just yeah, had, they yeah. had a lever. They had so many levers that did things, and like it just flooded the siege workshop for no reason. Nobody could figure out who put it there or why.
Yeah, I don't remember all the details anymore.
Yeah. And then he found the lever that he was looking for under a cow. That was pretty funny.
Man.
I can just imagine this cow standing over this big lever.
Yeah, I imagine like, hey, have you found that lever yet? It's like, no. Did you check under the cow? Might be sitting on it.
It's always remember all these cow.
All these elaborate schemes people had to come up with, like building a lever out of a certain material so that they could remember what it was for, because it would be the green lever.
Yeah.
and so on. That yeah, fortunately there's that note system now.
Putting the lava flood lever right next to the Siege Workshop flood lever.
Yeah, no, it's such a mess.
Quick, the Siege Workshop is getting dry. We better flood it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why that happened.
Siege weapons, by the way, are really hard to do anything with.
Yeah. No, especially because they can point in four directions. Your guy kind of, as he improves in skill, actually try and arc the projectile at somebody. But that takes a while. It's a kind of expensive training process if you're using ballista arrows too.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they're basically worthless. That improved sieges thing I was talking about is going to revamp them entirely, probably to the point where their vehicles more like wagons. You can kind of roll them up and...
What, so no more like goblins just standing around outside your fortress?
No, it's going to be all about losing is fun again. Failure.
Oh, that was lovely, man.
Yeah, I got a call.
So you can take your call.
Yeah, I'll be back shortly.
Let's just listen to you take the call.
He was not picking up, but
quick, while he's not here, let's talk about him behind his back.
Yeah, I don't know anything about him though. He's a madman. He's on your forum.
He's crazy.
Is he crazy?
I don't know. His name is a madman, so I guess he might be.
Yeah, you can infer from that. Although that's not his Skype name.
No. Oh, okay. Whoa. All right. Hey.
The Skype name is actor fake.
What?
Oh, we were just talking about you behind your.
Oh, mic. That's great. Spreading rumors.
No, not really. Wait, why is your Skype name Dr. Fake?
Because I'm a doctor and my last name is Fake.
Oh yeah, Tarn Adams is a... You have a PhD, don't you? In mathematics?
Yeah, mathematics. Mathematics. It's geometric measure theory.
Sweet. You're not technically a doctor unless you're like teaching or studying currently, are you?
I'm not a professor.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be appropriate to call me Professor Adams, unless there's some. I mean, I don't know much about it, but unless there's some kind of like that governor clause or whatever, where they'll still call a former governor a governor.
Yeah.
They'll still call a former president the president or whatever kind of. But I don't know if they do that actually. They've called former governors governors. They call former senators senators. Is that true with the president? Do they call him president? President Clinton and President Ford and.
I don't know.
But yeah, so I mean, unless there's something like that, then I'm not a professor, but I am a doctor. So,
Dr. Tom Adams.
Yeah, no, I don't enforce that on anybody. I use it when I fly, just not because I think I get any better service, but just because it's kind of funny. Because they give you an option, you know, what do you want to call yourself? Do you want to call yourself Mr., Ms., Mrs., or Doctor?
You get mail that says Miss Tarn Adams, don't you?
I get mail that says Miss Tarn Adams from at least two places. I don't know why that is. It's like it must – well, not must be, but it could be because they input the name into the computer and there was no gender on the form and they just have to guess. And so I don't know. Does Tarn sound girly?
No.
I mean, it sounds – yeah.
I know what Tarn means, so.
Yeah, it's like being called Lake.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Lake.
Small
it's like forest
lake,
or river.
Formed by glaciers.
Yeah, I don't know. Have you ever met anyone with first name of Lake? I know there's rivers and forests, but I don't know about lakes.
I know lakes.
Lake.
I live in California, and people there have all sorts of weird names because they like alternative names over there.
Yeah. No, I grew up there. Maybe I fit right in. I don't know. People still thought it was kind of weird.
It rhymes
with barn too, which is bad. And yarn and darn and.
I'm in Tennessee right now, which is where I grew up, but I live in California.
Yeah, you just flew back there, right?
You
flew back there for some reason.
I visit here during the summer.
That's right.
But, Madman.
What?
What are you doing?
Okay, I'm doing something completely dumb. Never mind, I'm stopping that. Anyways.
It's important to tinker around with stuff.
Man, I was tinkering around with scissors and a key, but that's irrelevant.
Is it a metal key? Are you going to get very far with that?
No.
let's not discuss it. I didn't get anywhere. Man, you know what classic Bay 12 game I like? World War One Medic. How long ago was that?
1995 or 4 or something?
Jesus.
I don't remember. It's pretty. The webpage went up in 2000, December of 2000. And I was mostly working on Armok 1 for quite a while. Here's World War One Medic, version 1.03, posted February 28th, 2004. But that might have been a little later than the original. But yeah, no, that was interesting. That was actually the first game we had that made it into a magazine. It didn't even get an article in the magazine. An intern put it on a CD with, I don't remember if it was CGW I don't remember. I think that might have been it, but I'm not 100% sure anymore. I don't remember. But that was amusing.
Speaking of Armok, what is that game like? Because you can't really get it anymore, can you?
Yeah, you can get it. I just don't advertise it anymore. The URL is bay12games.com/Armok.
What's the game like about, though?
So the idea was that this was, I've done like 97 versions of our fantasy game, right? I mean, we started with the basic version of Drag Slay, then we did the C version of Drag Slay. Drag Slay being an 8-letter shortening of Dragon Slayer because you had to have 8 letters back then.
Yeah.
And, so Drag Slay, the C version, then we did, a couple incarnations of Armok that never got released. Then the 2000 version of Armok that did get released, and then Dwarf Fortress. So the idea for that 2000 version of Armok was, after the previous failures, we thought, okay, let's start from the bottom up this time. So we started with just very basic stuff, like and as insane as we wanted it to be. So it's got the pattern of the hair on your forearm. And it has all the color of it and the textures and things and all this crazy stuff. It's got a very, very, very rudimentary spore style thing where you can select the stance points for your body. Like you can choose to walk around on your hands and it'll try and animate it. And it looks really bad, but you can walk around on one hand and one foot and it'll just show you walking around or whatever. Cause I was just trying to be as versatile as possible. I'm not even sure what the hell I was thinking, it was supposed to be a kind of adventure mode that was going to develop into, we didn't really have ideas about dwarves at that time. We didn't care about dwarves at all. That was a kind of completely different, branch of thinking that led to that happening. This one, you were supposed to eventually get up to controlling civilizations and stuff, but we were just going to start down with an RPG and an adventure and so on. So you walked around, eventually got up to 3D models and stuff. You were walking around, crappy 3D models, but you were walking around, and you could cast magic spells using our spell system, which was, it didn't really ever get realized, but it had a, had some cool ideas to it. All of the spells were, I mean, it was almost like writing a computer program if you wanted to get down to it. You just had these different cursors that moved around that you could create effects on, and you could interact with the different parts of the game. So you could have a spell that teleported someone's nose, like, 10 feet right or whatever.
Best spell that I've ever heard of in my life.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up because it changed the model, the face model, to show like the nose missing in this red hole, and you see a little nose floating off to the right, and then it would just fall on the ground or whatever. And you could flay people's skin off, and we had some textures for that. You could flay their skin off, or you know, do whatever you wanted about heating them up,
the crazy D&D spells that they had in the first versions.
I've been
dungeon mastering for about a week now. But there's all these crazy spells. Like, for the bard, there's like one that changes the color of a small object. It's like, when are you ever going to use that?
Bard tricks.
Yeah, they're called cantrips. They're like level 0 spells. It's like, hey, I got a coin behind your ear. And it's that kind of spell.
Which D&D is that?
I think that's version 2 where they introduced the bard spells.
Yeah, I think cantrips were something like version 2.
Yeah.
Because I remember those, and I remember thinking, what the hell are we going to use these for? And they'd have these paragraphs where they were like, here's an adventure done entirely with cantrips to show how they might be used. And I was like, well, that's not going to happen in any bar game.
Cantrips are actually pretty useful if you're a bar.
Yeah, yeah.
They're hilarious, for one thing. You just mess with everybody.
Yeah, no, I guess if you're trying to make money in a bar, you could use them.
I cast prestidigitation to make your hand look like a chicken. like make blood look like confetti. It's like, oh, chunks of confetti.
Yeah, so there was some versatility in the magic system. It was never fully realized, but that's the kind of thing that when we get to that in Dwarf Fortress at some point, because magic as a completely well defined proper thing that you can do yourself was slated for after version 1 because we thought it'd be kind of too distracting to put that in now.
Oh, version 1, that's a while off.
That's a while off. However, I mean, most definitely things with it are going to happen before, especially in terms of people doing things to you. So it'll be nice now, finally, to be able to put in a magic system that has quite a great deal of versatility to it. So you're essentially, I mean, it's basically like writing scripts if you want it to be. I mean, I don't want to torture people who want to make simple.
Make a cat
simple
appear in somebody's stomach.
Yeah, exactly, that kind of thing. And make it angry.
Poor cats, they're so abused in Dwarf Fortress.
It's just because I guess people don't think they have as much utility as dogs, and it's kind of true. I think people keep their cats once they get vermin eating your crops and so on, because cats will capture the vermin and keep your fortress fed.
The point of the horse and the mule that are always brought at the beginning? You can't use them for anything because it says
they're basically implied to have brought your wagon and stuff, but. So they're basically just for eating at first, unless someone really wants a pet mule or pet horse. But the idea later is that right now you see those dwarves running on the screw pumps, for instance. That type of mechanism where right now we've just got windmills and water wheels that you could make a one of those wheels like the first Conan movie or whatever where
your computer.
Did you see the computers that people have been making recently? Someone got an actual one of those, what are they called, 7-bar displays or whatever, I don't remember the names for these things, 7-segment.
That's because people are crazy.
Like on a regular watch, they use bridges to do it, and they had a timer, someone made an adding machine, I think it was, I don't remember if it was a 7-bit adding machine or something like that. And it is crazy when you see it. It's like this one was made with 1,500 mechanisms or whatever, and it's crazy. Crazy in a good way, of course.
Did you ever expect people to like do stuff like that with the water and the mechanisms and stuff?
I expected more to happen than I could think of myself. However, no. I mean, I didn't anticipate things like that. No, I didn't.
Well, I mean, you give people any kind of rudimentary, like, editing creation system, and they'll try to do crazy things with it.
Yeah, I just didn't. I mean, the fact that it came to fruition was kind of cool.
I can just imagine all these dwarves standing around all these channels, like, hey, look, it's an 8, and we can add one, and it'll be a 9.
Yeah, I mean it is anachronistic in a sense, but it's something that they did. So, and I'm going to give people a lot more tools to work with over time. I think that's actually just to interrupt for a second. That's one of those top 10 things I was talking about. In the top 10 right now is improved mechanics. So people will get a lot more tools to mess around with.
Make a robot out of a mountain.
I mean, it would be cool to get. I mean, it's kind of hard to get huge portions of the map swinging and stuff, but it's something that it'll have to be able to do with the vehicle update because boats are going to be handled that way, and not to mention the
vehicles.
Sieges and so on. Yeah, vehicles and so on.
Now you've got me interested.
And so And all of that involves, because I don't want to screw up pathfinding. Now, the problem with vehicles here is that although they can move in any direction, and by any I mean like 360 degrees just by kind of going over, over, up, over, over, up, that kind of thing, the having them display in more than four directions is hell on earth in a million ways. So the current idea is to have them point in one direction but move in another. And I don't think it'll be that bad. You know, if a boat's moving up, but it's moving kind of diagonal to the right and up or whatever, I don't think that's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think
speaking of like sort of accounting and numbers sort of thing, legendary bookkeepers are just hilarious because you can just have somebody, like, work on bookkeeping their whole lives, and then eventually they get super buff, I guess, from, like, carrying papers around.
Yeah, just the act of writing itself, I guess. They get really buff finger muscles so that they're so buff with their finger muscles. They must walk with their fingers to run so fast. And you can just see them scurrying around like that. But, yeah, fortunately, that's out. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective.
That's how I get my legendary people. I just have them be bookkeepers.
Yeah. So you'll have to find more appropriate venues. It will probably build their other attributes, though. Like they'll be thinking a little bit more logically. You know, after having done that, they'll probably be more patient.
What is the point of all the different leadership things, like lying and persuasiveness? Do they do different things, or do they?
So. Part of that was they do different things, but not as different as you might anticipate from the names. So it's just basically what I did is you take
Yeah, sorry, background stuff.
Yeah. Dead skin doesn't sound like background stuff. It seems like something you should pay attention to.
No.
No.
Go ahead.
So the idea is that you've got, say, I mean, I think it's a little less. I don't know, 10 social skills. So say there's an activity that someone needs to do, like the manager or the mayor. I don't remember anymore. The expedition leader consoling somebody who's complaining to them. So they wouldn't necessarily console them, but someone's coming to them with a complaint about their life, and they're supposed to make that person not unhappy anymore. Now, there are certain skills that are going to work for that, and certain ones that aren't. Not because they don't make any sense at all. So lying makes sense. Negotiating makes a bit of sense. Consoling definitely makes sense.
Comedian
makes a lot of sense. So what you do, what the dwarves do then, is it looks at their personalities. And it picks the skill they want to, the thing they want to try based on their personality, and then they start building those skills. So that's why you can end up with an imbalance sometimes, why it doesn't. And so for instance, people that are really blunt never gain the liar skill because they never try that. They always try something else. And if they're a happy, cheerful person, they'll comedian more often than they'll try negotiating with somebody. And if they're very pragmatic, they'll just sit there and negotiate with somebody. So there are effects that come out that way. And so as to the skills themselves, in dwarf mode, they really just kind of go to further reinforce the flavor assigned to each dwarf through their personality. But in something like adventure mode, you can see how it is going to have a lot more impact on the individuals.
Right.
There are going to be skills for adventurers, right? So you can, like, build things and dig and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I alluded to that briefly before when I was talking about adventure entities and what my plans were for the next series of releases. The skills are before the entities. So there's improved sieges, the top 10, and adventurer skills in an unknown order. Those things would be addressed. It could be adventurer skills first, for all I know. And when I say addressing adventurer skills, it could just be a portion, because we have an order that we want to do things. There's just doing stuff like hunting. Right now you can kill a wolf, but you can't eat it. I'm not sure if you'd eat a wolf.
You should be able to lick blood off yourself.
Can't you do that?
No, it says no. That's disgusting. You can't.
Oh yeah, no, you can do it if you're really thirsty or hungry. If you have to wait, if you're starving. But yeah, right now you have sensibilities. And I'm not sure what I think about that in terms of the sensibilities. It's like, should the player be able to do whatever he wants?
Yeah, you should be able to be a complete crazy madman. Kind of like our own madman right here.
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty crazy.
Yeah, you just lick blood and
I lick blood all the time.
Whose house was all the dead skin at, though?
Mine. Sorry.
So, yeah, I'm not sure who the madman is anymore.
No, that was a thing that my little sister is having trouble with.
Oh, okay, so that's who that is. Yes. That's right. Oh man, I don't know. Train of thought derailed again. But the
skills, the licking blood skills off yourself. Stuff.
Oh yeah, that's right. Skills. That's right. That's right. Because the idea is you want to, with adventure mode skills, the idea is to start with things that are really, really practical, like being able to clean a corpse and get the meat out of it, and then moving on to being able to fish and moving on to be able to
build
the structure, yeah.
I really want to build something as an adventurer. That'd be great.
Yeah, no, it's because it's kind of like the, it's kind of like the Bethesda games or whatever, in a sense that you would get your own structure, but you'd be able to have it a lot more customized and so on.
Yeah.
You'd be able to make your little dream house, and you'd be able to keep all your you'd be able to keep all your crap there. And then it would save it as a site, because it has to save it as a site or it doesn't save it. So you'd have a little site, your little site on the map or whatever. And it would be your little adventurer fort. You
fill
could
fill it with the corpses of people from town.
Yeah, then after you've done your serial killer act and so on, filled it with corpses, done all kinds of horrible things there.
That's all I do in adventure mode, by the way. I ask people about their families and then I kill them.
That's right. No, you got to hunt down the last one. But then what you could do is retire your adventurer in that house and then start a dwarf fortress on the house and collapse it. and then fill it with magma so no one ever remembers that horrible things happened there.
You should be able to get some wood and make a mount and then get somebody's head and put it on there. Because I want to have an adventurer house full of the heads of my victims. That'd just be like the creepiest thing ever. And like,
yeah.
The woods around me would turn into dark, evil woods.
So that's another, yeah, that's something that so there's a whole idea of sphere oriented regions, right, where you have all the different spheres in the game, and by sphere I mean things like war and chaos and charity and festivals and whatever, anything that a polytheistic god has had tacked after their name, right, is like god of this, that's a sphere. And so the cool thing is kind of like what you're saying. Once you have spheres associated to regions, then the actions in the regions could affect the sphere. So you could, you know, every time you commit a murder in an area, it could tack a murder point on it, and associated spheres and so on could get knocked on from that. And so it could keep doing that. Those things would fade fairly quickly, so you have to do your job well. But once you reach a certain threshold, it could start making creepy things happen, and the thing place could take on a life of its own. I mean, that could all depend on the world parameter metaphysics, so that it doesn't always work that way. They could say, do you want, you know, sphere oriented lands associated to actions or whatever?
That's one thing I like about adventure mode, is that you can just go around killing people, but. That's what pocket worlds are good for. I love pocket worlds because you can just make them in like half a minute and then commit total genocide.
Yeah, that's always.
Except that's harder with elves and dwarves because they don't actually have anything going on in their little towns.
Yeah, yeah. Now that's another one of those glaring defects for version one. The dwarf towns are going to be easier because we've got fortress mode to work with, so we just need to translate a bunch of crap down into there, and elf towns aren't really realized at all.
They just stand around in the forest. They don't even have like houses or anything. So.
Yeah, no, it's gonna end up being most likely, because we like to mine the cliches as giant trees, and that in general trees are gonna at some point they're gonna be shifted to multi-tile objects, even the regular trees that you chop down in the woods and stuff. So that they'd have several Z levels and so on.
Like
and so
you could, on you.
Yeah. You have to watch out. You have to. Whoa! I'm feeding back now. But I heard myself in my ear. I was like, ah. No. This would be one of the penalties of just giving a dwarf an axe and being like, hey, go chop down trees. You know, they might not be that bright.
Should I stand right under this tree while it's falling down? I don't know. I'm not very good at this lumberjacking thing. Maybe I should just stand right under it.
Yeah. I'd catch it
from there.
I'd have a vague idea of how to chop down a tree myself, but you never know. You never know how hard something is. I don't know how hard it is to direct the direction of a falling tree and so on.
Dwarf towns in adventure mode are just crazy. I mean, there's nothing in them. It's just this big, huge complex of nothing.
Yeah. And now you've got those tunnels. You can go through the big, huge complex and then get down to a tunnel and then walk through the tunnel until it hits its first chasm or something with a bridge that doesn't even span the chasm correctly, and then you get attacked by a bunch of monsters that kill you.
Which is good.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the tunnels are for. I guess they're all abandoned tunnels or something.
It makes questing really hard, is when you go into a cave and you can't even find the thing you're supposed to be killing.
Yeah. I mean, there's no sense of balance, no sense of anything like that right now. It should be intriguing, though, with the next version, because although the caves probably won't be any easier, they'll be gigantic. You'll have a cave going down, and I don't know if you saw any of those pictures I posted with the layers of...
I saw it.
Yeah, these gigantic layers, underground layers. So a cave will now kind of go down and connect in with those layers, and the layers will have vertical interconnections so that an adventurer can basically go from the top to the bottom without having a fortress have to necessarily mine everything out in advance if they start at a cave.
I went to go kill a big monster that was a big historical figure that had killed things and been worshipped by people, apparently. But I went to go kill it, and I went through the entire cave, and it wasn't there.
Yeah, the problem is, there's a couple problems, is the monsters move while you're down there, so you can explore the entire cave and just miss them. And second, they can also wander away from the entrance of the cave and just kind of wander around up there. So
well, that's horrible, because it's hard to find the entrance of the cave itself anyway.
Yeah, so basically what that needs is either some kind of tracking mechanic or some kind of challenge mechanic. I mean, the guy shouldn't be happy that you're there and should probably want to just take you out. Right now it's crap.
Speaking of worlds and stuff and generation, what's up with the evil seas? Are they like made of ooze?
Oh, the evil sea. Yeah. Well, I wanted you to be able to tell them apart. They do look kind of disgusting.
It looks like ooze.
Right now. It looks like it's ooze, or it looks like someone's been dumping bodies in the water or whatever. But right now I'm not sure. See, I was just thinking, you know, what should they look like or whatever. But since we don't actually have any other fluids besides water and magma supported right now, there's a plan to increase that number.
I saw an evil ocean in adventure mode, and I was like, oh, it says it's made of ooze. I guess I'll just jump on there and walk around. And I was like, oh, no, this is water. I'm stuck.
Yeah. Well, the part of that is the randomness of the naming engine. Like, if it was called the Ocean of Ooze or whatever, that's just the naming engine picking an evil, sick word.
The material also said a pelagic ooze or whatever.
Oh, that's a different matter. The pelagic ooze is actually a real-world material that occurs at the bottom of the ocean. So that's that. What you saw, the pelagic ooze, was just actually the ocean floor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't remember what it's made out of anymore, because there's sick crap falling from the top of the ocean to the bottom all the time. Dead bodies of various fish and all kinds of stuff. And I mean, limestone is just what all their bones and shells and things that are just compressed by pressure. Because you start from that sediment turns into, like, I don't remember, shale, and then turns into limestone or whatever. And then it gets moved around by continental drift and all the plates moving around and stuff. And until you get limestone back up top, and it's just disgusting, the whole process. So some part of that process is called pelagic ooze.
Okay. So that's what. Oceans are, like, completely just evil right now. There's nothing you can do with them. And as an adventurer, you can, like, jump down inside, but then you can't get out. And
because it has to load both the surface of the ocean and the floor of the ocean, the way the game works right now, it's also when you go out into the deep ocean, there's a huge lag associated to that. Because it has to have, you know, 100 columns of water or whatever, or 100 layers of water all at once, and it all sucks. Certainly will be fixed by the time we've got boats, whenever that'll be.
Boats. Yeah. Finally, we'll actually be able to make dwarven boats, and then just...
Well, who knows about that, but there'll be boats in the game.
I remember people made this, like, big, huge boat that was just anchored to a place.
And that's not unlike what we had in mind as far as what they'll look like. I mean, we're not thinking small boats here. We want to have, you know, a boat be, say, you know, 12, 16 tiles long and 5 tiles wide or something. Nice big boat. And certainly those would be great in adventure mode to really expand things out. And as far as dwarf mode, well, I don't know how boatsy dwarves are. It's not my first impression. But certainly if you have a seaside fort, you could be attacked by them.
Yes.
And whether or not you build them is... it's not something I'd outright restrict.
Seaside forts are just the worst. They're like the most bleak and desolate places ever. There's no good beaches anywhere. They're all just, like, depressing and covered with driftwood. The waves, though, are very nice, so compliments on that.
I was happy with that. I have all these bloats associated to that. Because I was happy doing the beaches, and I was like, okay, there should be little tide pools, and you should be able to see the little anemones in them and stuff. And then in adventure mode, you should be able to make little sand castles and stuff that get ruined by the waves and all. Just kind of went off.
Really, sand castles? I want to build a sand castle.
I want to build sand castles too. It'd be cool.
Another thing with the ocean is. Crap, I forgot what I was going to say. Just go on ahead, I guess. Remember it. Ocean.
Ocean.
Foam. Sand. Oh, I give up.
It'll come to
It's really hard to build there, though. Because there's, like, all this water seeping in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it sucks to be near the ocean.
One big aqueduct. Aqueduct. And then also, I don't know. But there are usually a lot of gems next to the ocean, so that's cool.
Yeah, I think that's a bug, but yeah, they're there.
Oh, wait, now I remember what I was going to say. Are you ever going to remove the feature of throwing vomit at people? Because that's, like, the best thing ever.
I think the fact that it kills people is a little weird, and that as we move... Even now with the current mechanics, I think it's possible. I haven't tested this thoroughly, but I think it's possible that if you pick up a big slurry of vomit and chuck it at someone, it'll just kind of splatter on them.
Oh, that's
sad. They won't die.
I like the messages that are like, he's struck down by spinning vomit.
Now, if you threw it hard enough, I mean, it does impart a force and so on, so... If you threw it hard enough, you just have to practice more. I don't think that a beginning person should be able to kill someone with vomit. But I think an expert vomit thrower, yeah. Especially if you use, like, one of those giant sticks with the cup on the end or something and put the vomit in there so you can get way more torque when you swing it, then, you know, maybe you could really hurt someone.
Can you imagine being killed by spinning vomit? That would be just the worst, most embarrassing thing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man, that's gonna go into the legends. Everybody's gonna know about this.
You get up to heaven, St. Peter's like, you got killed by what?
Oh, I've forgotten that you are your madman because you're so quiet.
Yeah, I know. I'm just not very good at interview, it seems.
I listened to about 20 minutes of the last podcast, but
you did?
It was like, because of the imbalance of the voices, I couldn't listen to it with my fan on and it's super hot.
Sorry.
So I didn't actually hear you guys talk about Dwarf Fortress, so I don't even know which ones of you play it and who plays it how long, and, or even if you talked about that, I don't even know the context in which it was mentioned on the first podcast.
Sorry.
Frankly, I don't remember either. I played
our first podcast was pretty horrible because I kept dropping and my microphone was like soft. But now I have a headset, so it's better.
Yeah. So you got a plan for the next one?
The next one is actually right after this one, and it's just us and Blueberry Clock. But that's going to be complicated because I haven't actually been on our forum for like 2 weeks.
Because you go through and talk about the different adventures that are running and stuff, right? Something like that.
Well, we're supposed to, but then we ended up not. We're just talking about the Queen's gold-plated Wii and whatever. Did you hear about that? The Queen of England got a gold-plated Wii.
She got a gold-plated Wii? I don't have a gold-plated Wii. I don't have a Wii either, but I don't have a gold-plated Wii. That's not... Did she purchase it or was it given to her?
She ordered it to be made.
She ordered a gold plated Wii.
Yes.
Well, I guess it has to be gold plated if you're the queen.
Yes, the Queen of England must have a quality Wii to be gold plated with. What kind of a computer do you have, Tarn?
What the heck is this? I just went out and got it after my last one died and I don't know much about it. It says AMD on it and Windows. It looks like a Gateway. I just went out and bought it from Best Buy, though. It was the cheapest one there. It costs like $400 or something, but it's, a $400 computer, that goes a long way these days. I've got more disk space or whatever than I can use with a 32-bit operating system.
I don't even use the hard drive on my computer anymore because I have an external. It's like 250 gigabytes.
I know. I mean, I've got my hard drive is partitioned so that I've got like 100 gigs for Windows, 100 gigs for Linux, and then what, like 600 gigs or something that aren't partitioned at all. And it doesn't matter because I'm not hurting for space at all on here.
How do you make Dwarf Fortress Mac compatible? Because there is a DS for Mac, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, the people that did that. The original one was Matt Moss. If I'm remembering the first name correctly. He just set up a whole project on Xcode and so on and set up the front end for it. I released a project. At that time, it was Cobalt Quest, the game that I've got up on Bay 12, had a source release, and that game was designed to have the same source as Dwarf Fortress in terms of the overall engine. And so he made that game Mac compatible just by rewriting everything.
Oh yeah, is there ever going to be like an Elf Fortress mode where you can make Elf Fortresses in trees, I guess?
There's a plan for it, of course. But you know, whether or not, you know, or when it's hard to say. I mean, I think there's a bloat for it in the development pages that just says you should be able to play elves and maybe they'll be on break most of the time or something, but that's all it says.
You should be able to send out caravans that constantly have nothing good in them.
there's another dev item for improving the items that come with elven caravans.
have an excuse to fry them all.
Yeah, no, playing Elf Fortress would be more fun now because when I had put that dev item up there, that was before the notion of cannibalistic elves. And now with the notion of cannibalistic elves, that changes everything, right?
Of course. Cannibalism always changes everything.
Yeah.
Elves eating elves? Hold on, what?
Well, it's not cannibalism in a sense. It's more like predation because it's different species they eat. So I don't know if you've looked at the World Generation Legends for an elf war. After elves win the war, they eat the people that they have killed.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it's aligning themselves with nature and an act of predation, because they're all supposed to be about nature spirits and so on. And
by the way, how do they make caravans? They can't use wood. So.
Well, this is something that is kind of relies on the magic or whatever, is that right now they can just be said to have used fallen trees, but later we want to kind of explore doing more interesting things
Oh yeah, they use fallen trees. Then why don't they let me use fallen trees?
Well, you filled the tree. The tree was alive, and you didn't wait for its natural time. And plus, they just don't like you guys.
I know. The diplomats constantly insult dwarves, don't they?
Yeah. It's kind of weird. I mean, it doesn't quite fit their cannibalistic image, because the elves are such smart asses. Constantly making short jokes and stuff. It's just not cool.
It makes it really hard to actually be like, yes, we will meet your request. It's just like, you just called me short. I don't like that.
Yeah, they're a bunch of dickheads.
Oh yeah, by the way, when I was collapsing buildings in that human town, the first one who died was my leader. So I was like, oh, that's bad.
Okay, I'm not gonna lie. That coughing was perfectly fine.
Yeah, sorry, that's somebody else. Oh yeah, Tarn, one of the things that I was frustrated by in the other interview is that I never really got to hear much about people yelling at you because it kept cutting out.
Oh yeah, in Silverdale, the gem of Washington. That's right. Yeah, no, they yell at people. They yell at people here walking down the street more than anywhere else I've ever lived. I lived a bunch of places. No, it's mostly when my brother and I are walking together, because we will walk down to he'll like come over to my apartment, and then we'll just walk to the Best Buy because it's across the street or something. Or we used to have this park that we walked to because it was a place that was good for planning. But you walk down the street and, you know, two guys walking together in this town, never a good idea. It's like, hey, faggot! Or whatever, that kind of thing, you know. But some people, it's not just a homophobe thing or whatever you want to call it, heteronormative or whatever you want to call it. It's just the fact that you don't have a car. Because you could be walking down the street by yourself.
Yeah.
You know, not another man in sight. Walking down the street by yourself, trying to cross a crosswalk, and the guy's like, "Run, Forrest, run!" And it's just irritating. But the most irritating one is when we were walking down the park, and this guy stopped his car in the middle of the street and was just like, "We're gonna kill you guys," or whatever. And then he just kind of waited, and then he drove off. It's like it's disconcerting. But I don't get it. It's like what, 16 times or something like that that's happened. We don't walk that much anymore, but never happened in College Station, Texas, never happened in Exeter, New Hampshire, or whatever, Stratham, New Hampshire, never happened in California, in the many places I lived in California.
Maybe they're like centaurs, but with trucks, like they're half person, half truck. So they're like,
it's possible.
Look at him, he's got legs, what's up with that?
Yeah, I can understand the bigotry, but it's all over here. And I don't know why Silverdale, Washington. There's kind of a confluence of high schools and Navy stuff around here, so there's a lot of young men around, and there's this triangle of bars that the cops are always just hanging out in the parking lots waiting to arrest people as they walk out of the bar and go into their cars or whatever. So there's a lot of things here that contribute to the overall manliness of the area in terms of screaming at people on the street for no damn reason. But that's the story.
crazy Washington town.
Yeah, it's not my first visit to Washington.
It's like one big strip mall, isn't it, up there?
There's some trees. There's some trees. It's nice. No, Washington's kind of nice. It's got a lot of evergreen trees and so on.
Here in Nashville, there's just trees everywhere. Even like in the suburb places. Just trees.
Yeah, yeah. And I can look out my window and see a forest worth of trees, and it's got really nice mountains because there's sort of volcanic activity and so on here. But it's not like Hawaii where you're dodging lava flows
so,
and stuff.
So
but,
it's like a really nice place. It's just got a whole bunch of people who hate walking.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, California is what you're looking for if you're looking for an internal strip mall. You can walk from San Francisco to Los Angeles along strip malls pretty much.
Just like 12 Starbucks on the same street.
Yeah, or just every little thing like that.
Here in Nashville, it's Walgreens that we have a lot of for some reason. It's just Walgreens everywhere.
Yeah, no, there's Walgreens sporadically in the places I've lived.
Just, there's like three Walgreens on the same street. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Walgreens and churches are what we have most of.
Yeah, I don't know. There's churches here. There's quite a few churches, but bars outnumber churches in this town. That's for sure. And when you're talking about the church to bar ratio, which is apparently important, the bars win here.
It's like a half bar, half church.
Yeah, wasted and then immediately forgiven.
Yeah, there's lots of bars and strip joints and massage rooms and payday loan check cashing places.
So no fortresses.
No, not one. The nearest fortress I went to was this old World War II bunker that was kind of on the Pacific Ocean, facing Japan or whatever. It's just. Just sitting there on the water by this lighthouse that's on the Columbia River between.
Yeah, that's an idea.
Oregon.
I should start like a community game where we build the dwarven Fort Knox.
Yeah, just make sure you have gold.
Gold bars.
Yeah.
Just put a million traps in all the places and build a building out of steel or whatever. Or soap.
Soap. Yeah, well, you could do a mosaic, steel and soap, and see which one the robbers go for.
So, why engravers? They're pretty free spirits, aren't they? They just engrave whatever.
This is true. They engrave. Now they have it checks their preferences, and so they'll often engrave things that they like. That's why you see, I mean, if one of them likes cockroaches, you'll just get cockroaches engraved all over your fortress.
Well, they had all that, like, disturbing elephant imagery, didn't they?
They'll also look at historical events relevant to your site, and they'll post those. They'll do your civilization symbols, and so on. There's a lot more that could be done with that, but since it's kind of superfluous.
Engravings are pretty hilarious because it's just like there's a dwarf and dwarves.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to phrase things in a natural way when you've got a million inputs or whatever that it could be. So it could certainly check for a racial alignment between the subject and object, and then say, in any different ways it could refer to that. It's like, there are dwarves in this engraving, and one of them in particular is doing something or whatever.
I mean, it's always funny to imagine an elephant making a plaintive gesture.
No, I guess they're into the whole anthropomorphic thing. But I wasn't really working with any specific examples in mind, so I'm not sure what their culture is like in terms of what their drawings look like and stuff.
Yeah, but what do their drawings seem look like? Are they like cave paintings or are they?
Oh no! I just they're engraved in the stone. I just meant it.
Are they good? I mean, what the quality is? Are they like good or are they just like stick figures?
If something is called a masterful engraving, I'm not sure because there's different types of art that existed up to 1400, which is our arbitrary cutoff in general, and the stuff was starting to get pretty good by then. So I would give the dwarves the benefit of the doubt in terms of how good their engravings are. Now they don't. There'll be other things later, like paintings and so on.
Yeah,
and,
I was about to ask, are there ever going to be paintings? And you can just
paintings, tapestries,
sort of
that kind of. Yeah, all kinds of stuff coming at some point, like everything else. But it's in the dev notes anyway, which means that it's something that I'll be mindful of. And anytime I do a release, I kind of look over them.
Oh man,
and,
I can't imagine the paintings. Those would be really disturbing.
Yeah, especially when it starts talking about their style and so on.
Picasso thing going on, like the elephant has a trunk coming out of its head. Instead of its face, it's just coming out of the top there.
That's right. They can just talk about their horrible abject horrors. They're screaming and how their eyes are all twisted and shit. No, it should be cool. should be cool. Well,
it'll never be as good as crayon art.
Yeah. Well, did you ever get one? The crayon art. The crayon art's fascinating.
I don't have any money, so I can't
really. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's difficult to send money. I got a 50-cent donation today.
Well,
maybe he confused me for... Yeah. I was going to look on PayPal to see how much... maybe I should do that now. I'm thinking, did it all get eaten by fees, or just most of it?
Well, I mean, because you usually get, like, over $2,000 a month, don't you?
Yeah, this month might be a little different, but I can understand people getting tired of waiting.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, let me click details of this transaction.
One thing about this game being text-based, though, is that people that don't know anything about computers, like, I was just using a public computer at school, and, like, I was playing Dwarf Fortress, and somebody was like, oh, look, he's hacking. I was like, no.
Now, what happened? I mean, the people used to play those kind of games, you know, all the roguelike games or whatever.
Yeah, I have so many roguelikes, and they're all just crazy. All these games are just so hard. It's like you compare.
Yeah, I've only won a couple of them.
You compare games today with all their crazy graphics and things to games like back then, even on the NES, they're like so much harder. Like so.
Yeah.
It's like now they have all these crazy FPSs with graphics or whatever, but they're really easy.
Yeah, no, I just went on a kind of old games kick a little while ago, playing all the games that I had in the mid 80s that I never won, like Sentinel Worlds and Wizard's Crown, and I don't remember what else, but yeah, no, the games are pretty hard.
But I don't know what the thing with like hacking is. It's like even if I just have a command prompt open, they're like, oh, he's hacking.
I don't know. So that 50 cents got turned into 18 cents for me.
Oh.
So I can't extend an offer for a crayon art reward there because it doesn't cover postage.
Oh,
it's too bad.
Yeah. People don't know anything about computers at my school. It was like they were trying to do a PowerPoint presentation, right, for one of my classes, and like they seem to be having trouble with the mouse there. They're like, oh no, how do I use a mouse? And just kind of sort of move it around in circles.
Now, you figure, I don't know, you figure people would know more and more about computers as time passed.
Well, it's because I guess all they do is they go on MySpace. It's pretty basic.
Wait, so they do have computers, they just use them for MySpace?
Yeah. I don't know, the people at my school are stupid. Do you ever see electricity coming into play in Dwarf Fortress?
Well, I see lightning.
Yeah.
In that sense,
I see London, I see France.
My ears start hurting. But lightning, and then whatever would happen when lightning strikes a fortress that has various metal crap in it.
You're horrible.
I'm all for it. But as far as electricity in terms of electrical applications, probably not. I mean, there's like things like batteries were invented in 1800.
Yeah.
And
there was ancient battery they found.
No, I was just about to say the Baghdad battery, no one knows if it was used as a battery. And I believe a lemon could be used to generate more electricity than that, I think people found.
Yeah.
So it's just the principles need to be understood.
Potatoes, by the way, generate more electricity than lemons.
So potatoes even better?
Yeah.
So definitely not then, in terms of whether or not that thing was actually for or whatever. Who knows?
What's the point of the potash makers? What do they do?
You can use that to make better glass, I believe. You mix that with how does that work? If you use that in the glass process, I believe that's how you get your clear glass. And then you use, but you can also bake. Is that the stuff you bake again to get pearl ash? And then you can, you can use that to get clear glass.
I think. I'm actually pretty bad at like running a fortress, so I never actually.
Yeah, I've totally forgotten the details of glass making. It's kind of funny.
I never actually get to the point where you've got like 20 nobles asking for different things. I usually kill everybody by then.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's not much to look forward to there, and as far as because the late game is not as polished, if you want to call it that,
yeah,
as the early game, and things like the economy and so on are just frustrating right now. They're awaiting salvation from
nobles. Nobles are there to be your fodder for your weird traps that you make at the moment.
Yeah, fortunately, yeah. Hopefully, a lot of that's mitigated next time.
That and soap makers.
Yeah, soap makers. I'm not sure. It depends on how important they are for surgery. I don't know if people like cheese makers.
Is there going to be like a hospital room?
There's a hospital zone. I think I used a hospital zone, and you can place beds and traction tables and so on in it, and a chest to store your bandages and so on. And there's crushes and splints and six new skills for dwarves to use in medical care, surgeries, and so on. And we're just kind of getting started there. But I mean, that's all going in. But we're in terms of overall health.
Are they actually going to be like good doctors, or are they going to be like medieval, just cut your leg off doctors?
Well, the thing that's interesting about this is that people are actually pretty good at certain things, and other things not so much. So things like compound fractures, they can actually the broken bones, they can handle those very well in general, to the point of using traction and splints and surgery to fix them. Other things, illnesses and stuff, of course there was no germ theory and all that kind of thing, so...
I can imagine like a dwarven Dr. House walking around.
There is a diagnostic skill, so you can have a diagnostician or whatever, however I butcher that word.
He'll have like a wounded leg or whatever.
Yeah, so if you assign your surgeon or your diagnostician to have zero skill, you know, then he's gonna screw up, most likely, in like horrible ways.
Just like cut their head off trying to cure a headache or whatever.
Yeah, even if you want to be more realistic about it, he'll probably just be kind of depressing like that. Like a guy comes in with a broken leg and the guy's like, well, we're going to have to cut that off. And there's a traction bench sitting right there and just cut it off.
Do seriously injured dwarves ever actually recover, or do they just sit in their bed for the rest of their life?
So in the current released version, which is most likely what this question is about, the code is so weird there when I went and looked at it. It's like minor wounds made more sense, but the large wounds, it's like, yeah, look at it every season or so and then maybe fix it or something. It was just really weird. And so they could hypothetically sit there for 5 or 6 years not healing, or they could hypothetically be healed in one instant if you were near a season change. So it's that's all fixed now, all really elaborately fixed.
Oh, yeah. Another thing I wanted to ask you is, as an adventurer, if you join a religion, you can try to talk to your god. Is that ever successful?
No. No, in adventure mode, the gods don't exist right now, or the game in general.
So the whole trying to talk to your god is just completely useless?
No, well, it's something people do, you know.
Well, yeah, nothing comes out of it. Is that some sort of statement you're trying to make?
No, it's just that the gods don't exist right now.
Yeah.
So that's what would happen.
Are you ever going to have to, like,
The gods will exist later in certain universes, and then talking to them might produce the same results, or you might actually get through to them sometimes. It really depends on the metaphysics. I mean, there's no reason there can't be a universe where God talks to absolutely everybody all the time, and it's an intelligible conversation.
The God of a million mouths and ears.
Yeah, yeah. So that's all possible, you know, that could happen. Or you could have one where the gods never answer people's prayers or whatever, but they still do things. Wouldn't stop people from trying to get them to intercede.
Are there ever going to be, like, God monsters that just come and attack your fortress or whatever?
You mean a manifestation of like an actual god that came down to cause trouble? That's fair game. There are a few power goals about god manifestations, and we're all for it.
Those power goals are pretty interesting to read, all those scenarios that you hope to have.
I mean, it's all very ambitious, mostly because most of them involve kind of, there's this sense that the AI has to be pretty good, or the sense that the conversation engine has to be pretty good. And we've been thinking a lot about how those things might work, but it's also the kind of thing that gets put off in terms of adding basic mechanics first, so... Yeah, power goals are kind of strange that way, in that almost all of them involved some kind of AI or conversation mechanic that's hard to get at. So that's why none of them have been checked off yet. But we're thinking about how to revamp what we're doing and revamp that system so that we can keep what's there, but also kind of make it more feasible, more useful to us. Because right now it's just kind of this pie in the sky stuff.
Yeah. Madman, what are you doing?
I'm here, just listening, because this is... I don't know, it's kind of like above me, Jesus.
Say something. Ask him something. Do it.
Okay. Man, you ever put any thought into, like, a caravan mode? I've always wanted to play as a caravan.
Yeah, there's a couple... There's two ways in which we're considering that. I think one of them made DevNext, but I'm not sure, so maybe it hasn't been fully... publicized here, but the two ideas are the following. First of all, there's this caravan arc that we all talk about, right? The caravan arc. And so the caravans, like the ones that arrive at your fortress, for instance, will be on the world map traveling around. So it wouldn't just be like clockwork anymore. They would be on the world map traveling around, and we just have to balance that so that it still makes sense roughly for fortress mode. So once you get those, that means that you'd be able to see them in adventure mode, because they'd be there traveling around, and so you'd be able to see them. And so there's some interactions there to start, and mostly you being bad, right? But you could also be a caravan guard, for instance, and travel with them. And then slowly that can turn into organizing so that you're actually the merchant.
Or you could hitch a ride on them, like people used to ride on their post wagons or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it'd certainly be safer if there's trouble, and faster if it's faster.
So,
but,
will there ever actually be like other dwarven startup fortresses like your own, or would that be like too annoying for the?
I'm not sure in what sense you mean.
Will there ever actually be like dwarves coming from other kingdoms actively making fortresses, or will that always be you?
Yeah, no. I don't know why I said no, because the answer is yes, but it's because you said, well, it'll only be you, so I mean no on that, but the idea is that every migrant should actually come from the world map somewhere. Now, there's a sense in which that's a bad, and so it requires further discussions, because if you only have, like 500 people, siphoning your migrants off from other places changes their size in a dramatic way, right? So there's not enough people to go around, and it would start to get really weird. But the thing, I don't remember if you remember this from the last podcast, was the last podcast on which I was interviewed, not your last podcast, the talk about abstract populations. So using that then, population migrations and so on can be handled in such a way that you can get a lot of migrants and stuff, and they'd actually come from places. And moreover, when we get the world map started, so they're sending armies places, they're sending armies places. Then having other startup forts is absolutely in the cards, even ones you're competing with for migrants and so on. And there could even be civil wars, that kind of thing. we're all looking forward to that. That's all on DevNext, actually, these notions about conflicts over succession, schisms between places, contested claims for positions in entity, territory disputes, and so on. Because there's all this stuff that you can see in the legends, like this is the territory of this entity, but it isn't actually used for anything.
Yeah.
So it's all headed for this kind of thing. And on the caravan thing, aside from what we're developing there, there's also this notion that could get explored, that a number of people had suggested, and it ties into the caravan scenario very well, of being able to control your starting dwarves before they arrive at their location, so that you'd start at another dwarf fortress or whatever situation your dwarves are coming from, and then be able to go to your destination and then establish your fortress. Of course, some people wouldn't want to do that, so that wouldn't be a required thing. It'd be very interesting.
What I want is like a switch that lets you switch on certain things or whatever. Like you were talking about crap. It's like managing crap and like where it goes and whatever. Well, you can just switch it off, maybe. There's just this big, huge table of things you can switch off. I don't know how that would work, but it's like...
Yeah, so you mean in terms of what, just stuff that's annoying you during fortress mode or something? Or
yeah.
I don't get it.
Like at the beginning, you'll be asked, do you want to manage this or whatever? Or do you want to have a 2D fort or a 3D fort or whatever? I think that would be pretty cool, but I don't know if that would actually work. So.
Yeah, no, I've been thinking, there's a bloat on that. It's called like the flat world bloat or something. There's a couple reasons for that. Some people like the feel of the 2D part better. They don't really like all those ramps and stuff like that. And it's understandable. And then there's people that have memory issues, because as you expand the map vertically, it starts to gobble away.
Yeah.
And processor issues as well, because it has more stuff to consider. And so the problems there have been basically figuring out how to just get the elevation to work, like flatten the map but still have some notion of elevation so it can still create the biomes correctly and so on. And it's not insurmountable. It was just when I tried it, because I was going to just kind of Easter egg it for one of the releases at one point. But when I started trying to do it, I was like, oh, man, this is a real pain in the ass. So it's got to be more of an actual project at some point. But
yeah.
No, I was definitely thinking about doing it.
Adventure mode, by the way, killing people is extremely detailed and it's gruesome. It's like you're hacking children's legs off. It's just crazy.
Well, you are, man. I didn't tell you to do it.
I know, but it's just I just love all these descriptions that come out of it.
Yeah, no, we've been doing that forever. It's like our very first games were in BASIC, but we were still just like it would always just talk about how it was, you know, blasting people's legs off and all that kind of thing. And going back and playing these old games, I could kind of see where some of that came from, because I always thought, just thinking back, I always thought it was definitely the cyberpunk role-playing game. And that definitely had a lot to do with it, because that had that was kind of the first role-playing game we played. That was like 80-something. It was the first role-playing game we played that had no hit points. It was based on shooting pieces of your body or whatever. And this was a pen and paper role-playing game.
That's sort of horrible, though. It's like you're dragging yourself along on your arms because your legs are packed off or whatever.
Violence is a horrible thing.
Oh,
it's true.
Speaking of BASIC, I actually did, me and the tech club actually rescued an old Apple II recently. And I was the only one who knew any BASIC, and it's like all I could do was make it print the same thing over and over again.
I don't remember my BASIC anymore. But
it's like
yeah,
the easiest thing to do on BASIC is like print poop and then go to 10 or whatever.
Yeah. I remember it was a big thing when we were kids, discovering that you could use semicolons in BASIC to put stuff on the same line. So you could put several statements on the same line and separate them with semicolons, so that you could, when you're making an animation displaying things on the screen, you could have different, because normally you'd have to put print and you'd put all of the characters that you want to display, but they'd all be the same color. But if you put print and the characters you want to display, and then a semicolon, and then the color, and then a semicolon, and then print, and then a semicolon, the color, and semicolon, you could have different colors on the same line. And that was a big step up when we were like 8 years old, downloading things off BBSs or whatever.
Unfortunately,
Yeah, I forgot all my basic, though.
Unfortunately, the Apple that we got was
it was monochrome.
The Apple that we got was an Apple IIe, but it had a monochrome monitor on it.
yeah. I vaguely remember monochrome.
Then, of course, we left it in, like, the engineering and design room, and, like, some students started poking around with it because they thought it was funny and old, and it stopped working.
M students.
Like, I made it work again because I was prodding around inside of it, and I made it work, and then they broke it again, and then it was just totally broken.
So are these just random students or these other tech students?
No, they were in engineering and design, I guess, and they just saw it sitting on a counter, and they're like, "Oh, we can pop the top off of this. Let's see what's inside." And they started like messing around with wires, I guess, and it all broke.
That's kind of messed up.
Yeah.
That's kind of a messed up impulse. And people can't control themselves sometimes.
Yeah. Because we have all these... Because the whole point of the tech club is that we have all these horrible broken computers from all over the place, and we're supposed to repair them and, like, send them back, but we end up just messing around with them. Because we get them, and they're, like, totally horrible and broken, and then we're like, okay, how can we put Linux on this?
I've struggled with the Linux partition, but I finally got it working. Because you can't, you can't install Windows first or something.
Yeah.
Because one of them really doesn't like following the other. and so that's a pain in the ass, and I managed to screw up, blue screen. I haven't blue screened for a long time, but I managed to blue screen myself setting up those partitions, and, but finally working.
Well, see, my friend in the tech club, he's just totally crazy about Linux, right? So he's like, "Oh, I totally want this new PS3 so I can put Linux on it." And I was like, "What? It's like it's like $500. You're really just going to get the Linux on it?"
Yeah. No, I don't have a PlayStation 3. I have a PlayStation 2. And we recently got an Xbox.
I'm a horrible, horrible person, so I have, like, all of the current-gen, I guess, systems.
Yeah, I don't have a Wii, because I don't know. I can't think of a game I wanted to play on it, so yeah. I don't have one.
There should be a Zelda-type game, but, like, randomly generated. That'd be cool.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of things that people could do with the generation and so on. It never seems to play out.
NetHack is like the most hilarious thing, because all I wanted to do was walk around and like engrave things on stuff. I just thought that was the coolest thing. It's like, hey, I can write Kilroy was here on the wall.
Yeah. No, you got to use a fire wand or whatever, though, I guess. Yeah. I don't remember the rules anymore. Just, there's too many rules.
You just like wand the dust or whatever.
Yeah, that gets scuffed out, though. You want to have a permanent testament. And then you want to die on that level so it stays there forever in your bones file or whatever. Yeah. No, that was the thing with us for those games, is like getting the high score list to permanently... like, our rule was that if you ever thought you were about to die, you had to name the creature immediately so that it would say the name on the high score list of the guy that killed you. And we always end up building up our high score list. We never really got that far in that game. We got down to, like, the... just past the castle with the drawbridge and stuff, but I don't remember quite how.
All these Roblox have just crazy weird features to them. Like, I was playing one recently, and it's just really horribly, horribly hard roguelike, but there's a vomit button. You just press a key, and you vomit in a set direction.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a reason for that, like you eat poisoned food and you'd want to vomit or something.
I don't know.
Sometimes the feature precedes the purpose for the feature. We certainly have a lot of that in our game.
Yeah. like the fire. There's no point to it in adventure mode. You can just set trees.
That's right.
You just set trees on fire and then you will be on fire.
Yeah, I mean, you can kill people in adventure mode when there's not much of a point either. there's a lot of things in adventure mode don't make any sense.
What I would like to see is being able to set buildings on fire, so then I could just not only completely kill everybody in the town, but also set the buildings on fire.
Yeah, that's one of the things with constructions are fairly new in the grand scheme of things, because people wanted to rewall, right? They wanted to rewall their fortresses. And yeah. Constructions are fairly new, and so they don't have a lot of environmental interactions. Fire doesn't work with them. Temperature doesn't cause them to set on fire. Magma doesn't burn them. There's all kinds of things that don't happen with
constructions. There was that one community game where they built that giant tower in the middle of a swamp. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, there have been some crazy things. I like that bridge people built across the canyon with the flags on it and stuff. There's all kinds of things.
That thing was really impressive in the 3D mode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
which,
that's all
cool. The visualizer for Dwarf Fortress is just horrible.
I know that.
It's really bad.
No. I know that. I've made 3D games before, and they look better than that. But, that thing was... I don't remember what the genesis of that was. It wasn't anything to be taken seriously.
It's so hard to see anything with it, though. It's just all weird gray, arbitrary shapes.
Yeah, no, I know. I don't remember what the purpose for it was. It wasn't meant to be taken seriously, really, though.
It says in the visualizer.
Yeah. No, it's not meant to be useful at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't really know. I don't really know where we're going with that now. I might as well just remove it pretty much, because people are just going to use those utilities anyway. There's no reason to have the visualizer.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, who knows?
Why are there, never mind. Why do you have to make a bed out of wood?
The original thing was that wood is a little more comfortable to sleep on than stone. And it forced you to use your trees. Back in the 2D version, there was reason to compel you to go out and use the forest and stuff for the elf plots and so on. And that's the vestigial thing that's been there for a long time. But there are dev plans and, of course, millions of suggestions as far as what should be done with that. And we're for doing all of it.
And
we just need the time.
As soon as you actually mint your coins and, like, have an economy, everything just goes downhill from there.
Yeah. I know I mentioned that. The economy sucks. There's got to be more of a reason for that. Of course, like many things, it requires kind of the caravan arc for it to make a lot of sense. Even internally, it sucks.
You should be able to build a catapult and then launch arbitrary things out of it, like a cat.
Poor cats. I understand, but yeah, no, cats catch a lot of crap. The catapult certainly that will come up.
Catapult.
Yeah. But that'll come up, I believe, when you've got things like burning oil and stuff like that, when there's a few more materials and a reason to do something like that, or something that turns into a gas cloud somehow.
Like, yeah.
Anything other than a rock. then probably the easiest way to implement that would be just to punch up a list, a categorized list. It would be like rocks, actual catapult ammo, and other or something. And so you could
I've always liked packaging things. I don't know why. I just like having things nicely packaged. But you can have like bins and barrels and stuff, but it's really hard to actually get your dwarves to put things in them. Like, they just sort of walk around like, yeah, I'll just put these diamonds on the floor here, next to the bin of diamonds.
Yeah, lazy asses. But yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Dwarves are just like the worst workers ever. They just like go off and have parties or like go out and eat and drink, and like you'll be like, oh man, we need to build this trade depot, and they're like, nah.
Among video games, certainly they're the worst workers. But I mean, you gotta take breaks in life and so on. You can't just work all the time.
Well, yeah, but there will be times when I'm like, dude, the caravan is coming right now, and they'll be like,
yeah. No, this is the thing. This is where it comes up with the AI problems and so on. It's like certain times you have a sense of urgency, whether it's a military matter or a diplomatic matter or any matter that you might have a sense of urgency about, and it can't be imparted to the dwarves in the way that you want to impart that sense of urgency.
It's just like, a dragon is coming. We better put up walls. Nah. Whatever. Yeah. Who cares?
So ideally, they'd be able to kind of detect that based on the things that are happening in the fortress. But sometimes urgent events don't really lend themselves to detection if it's some kind of thing that's going wrong with flows or something like that. And the problem is the commands that you add to deal with emergencies are highly exploitable in non-emergency situations. So, There's that sense. I mean, even activating the military, which is a recent discussion we've been having in the Future of the Fortress list of items thread on the forum is just being able to activate the military anytime you want to take a dwarf and then move him somewhere and then unactivate him or whatever, so you can kind of put your dwarves anywhere you want. That's a highly exploitable mechanic. At the same time, if you're under attack, you need to be able to do that.
Well, sparring is hilarious, by the way. Especially if you have them sparring like on top of a tower with like no walls or whatever.
Why would you do that?
Because it's funny and they knock each other off.
That's right. No, it's very dangerous, dwarven sumo.
Lava is the most fun substance there is.
Yeah, our lava is especially fun because it never cools off unless you hit it with water. So it doesn't get sticky all everywhere unless you want it to.
I really want to build a boat murder type fort where it just, like, you pull the lever and everything is burned. It's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, you can do that in the 3D version. You have to situate yourself appropriately with respect to the lava tube. And then you can...
Can't you start a fortress, like, deep within a mountain?
Well, there's a couple senses to that question. Whenever someone asks why can't you do something, it's like, well, there's the practical aspect of just not having enough time to have done it yet. Yeah. And then there's the matter of whether or not philosophically it's something I want to put in the game. And so things like tunnels, if you're talking about tunnels, I'm not sure. Tunnels are fairly recent. I mean, the idea is that you send out your wagon from a fortress, and so you don't get in the ground without digging. But there's the tunnels are a fairly new mechanic, and starting a fortress on a tunnel is something we're definitely for. And it's not that hard to do either.
Start a fortress like back in the mountains. You have to like start on the edge of a mountain.
So I misinterpreted what you said. When you said deep in the mountain, I thought you were talking about underground.
No.
But you're just talking about within a mountain range away from the border. That's completely different. Yeah, so the idea there is that we wanted to maintain for adventure mode some of the wonder of hitting a summit. And there were some really fun threads about that, like people trying to get to the summit of a mountain and so on.
You
so if you can just tackle,
climb,
so,
can you?
Not yet, but right now the cliffs are all so unsheer that you can walk. You still get attacked by giant eagles and
just sort of
yeti
walk up
shit.
Mount Everest.
So yeah. So but it's still a lot of fun. It's actually more fun than you might anticipate. When I was reading the thread, I got a real kick out of how much fun people were having trying to reach the summit of a mountain. But there's that. So it's kind of this thing where if you can go to the highest peak, just tack a dwarf fortress on there, then it kind of defeats that. Now the solution though is a bit of a longer term thing, but the solution rests in that thing we were talking about with the wagon, being able to command your dwarf fortress wagons. Yeah. Then if you can make it, you can make it. That's
I
all
can
there
just
to
imagine
it.
Like the horse and the mule and all the dwarves just sort of standing on the front of the wagon and it's just going straight up a cliff.
I can imagine you getting halfway up the mountain and then having to slaughter the mule for food and so on. And
I guess the mule and the horse would have like suction cups on their hooves.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know much about. How people would climb mountains and then go on to make fortresses on them. So, yeah, I'm not sure how it would work out. It'd be like...
to have climbing, though, right?
Absolutely.
I need to be able to get out of the ocean is my big thing.
Yeah. No, well, part of that is that there's sort of a ramp deficit there, and if you can't swim, I'm not even sure you can use the ramps to begin with. But there's problems. I mean, even if you fall into one of those stupid little swamps, you drown, or into a river, or whatever. There's a lot of little things that would be solved by adding ramps, and then in addition, just making it make a little more sense, like being able to climb up ashore and so on. And that's kind of a minor form of climbing. There's also the thing of putting a sheer cliffs back in the game, and being able to climb those. But even more immediate would be something like having the cliffs in the underground and so on, and just being able to have things like the spiders, the giant cave spiders, and others just kind of be able to pour up a cliff or something.
Oh God, that's horrible.
Yeah, that's all about the sense of horror and so on from the underground. Should be cool.
Oh man, dwarves and their crazy mountain fortresses. I mean, especially something like Boat Murdered. I just love the idea of like all these dwarves still in their fortress with all these like tattered clothes. Like, you know, everything's fine. It's just miasma everywhere and like dead cats.
Yeah, that's a kind of
burning
a mess up.
Horrible, horrible. Fortresses are just doomed, aren't they?
Yeah. No, that's the whole losing is fun motto, is to try and get people used to that fact. Now, in a sense, there's kind of an antiquated notion, because enough people want to retire their fortresses, and as much as we want people to go out, retirement's also fine, because the main goal behind the whole losing of the fortresses and so on being a game mechanic is to get people to stay in the same world and to advance the world. Because if people just kind of constantly reload their saves and so on, they're going to miss half the game.
And it also makes it like a roguelike, but on a huge scale. Like, you know, in regular roguelikes, your little adventurer guy is just bound to die. There's like no way to win. But also, there's like this huge community is just bound to die because of all the stupid nobles. Like, you can't export anything ever.
Yeah, they don't like that. And, they like to have that stuff hanging around them.
And you have to make me mini forges, even though you can only make toys.
Yeah, well, that's one of the voting things, is greater specificity in orders, if you like, especially with regards to the material, because you'll constantly get these material rock requests and so on. I don't know if they make bad rock requests anymore, because I cut some of that out, but in terms of making specific rocks. But they used to request specific rocks if they don't anymore.
They keep requesting that's quite that you don't have and stuff.
Yeah, there's some checks for that, so it could be a lot worse. They do a lot of checking to make sure that they're not being unreasonable, but there's an awful lot of things in the game, and it's hard to check if you've got one or you don't sometimes.
There are dragons in the game, aren't there?
Absolutely, yeah, there's dragons.
Those things are horrible.
It's like when you actually make dragon fire act like fire instead of like making it take off like 2d10 hit points or whatever.
Yeah.
It has these repercussions. It can do all kinds of horrible things everywhere, catch everything on fire, burn people up and so on. So
burn all the puppies.
The poor puppies. Yeah.
I love the idea of burning things having the little exclamation points around them, because then it's like
it's like, hey, this is on fire!
And that makes it a lot easier for when you're, like, trying to represent things that are happening at Dwarf Fortress, like, on the forums. Like, you can say, oh, here is an exclamation point, noble exclamation point. He's on fire. Oh, man. Yeah. I love flaming things, because they're just pretty colors. They keep flashing at me.
Yeah, I don't know why anyone would complain about being able to set fire to thing in adventure mode, then.
Well, it's because the only point is to kill yourself.
Just lay down
on the fire and then you'll die.
Yeah, now you could do something like a fire break or something. Like, you could set a fire, let it burn a bit, and then sleep in the middle of the ashes.
Oh,
And then let the fire wake up and let the fire have taken its course.
Are there ever going to be, like, dreams for adventurers when they're sleeping instead of just Z's or something?
Yeah, right now, it's funny. There's actually a dream mechanic in the game right now that was for an old plot device where there was this thing that happened, like, the fifth year of your Fortress or something. This was in the 2D version.
Yeah.
Before it was released, where a wizard would come and ask for one of your dwarves, and he'd have to come with him, and if you refused to give him a dwarf, then an army of the dead would attack you, and your dead in your fortress would resurrect, and so on, and attack as zombies, and people would be able to recognize their zombies relatives attacking them and stuff, and give them extra bad thoughts and so on, but the thing there is that before you got attacked by that army of the dead, it would randomly give at least one of your sleeping dwarves a dream premonition, but you wouldn't know it unless you saw it in their thoughts.
Yeah.
It's like this guy had a horrible dream lately about the fortress being attacked by an army of the dead.
And he needs alcohol to get through the working day.
It's true, even if he's 1 year old.
It's kind of weird thinking about the babies just drinking mugs of ale.
Yeah, I know, they might have been lactate booze.
I love
the
idea of tantrum spirals, though, in fortresses. It's like, oh, you killed my brother, I'm going to kill you. And then it's like, oh, you killed my brother, I'm going to kill this other guy.
And I've got no sense of restraint. It's like there are feuds in real life and so on, but they usually happen over a course of years rather than just all at once. Like people never need to
just
take
like
a break.
One guy dies and then everybody starts killing each other.
Yeah, no, that should be mitigated a bit by things later, but yeah, right now it's kind of crazy.
The biggest example I can think of is once again a boat murdered. There was that one former ruler who started like beating the crap out of somebody while he was on fire. That was like the best thing.
Yeah, it was Sankus or whatever.
Yeah, Sankus.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's awesome.
Wall on fire.
Yeah, Stankus is the reason that it's called magma instead of lava on the inside, because he pointed that out. But,
oh, man, that was just the best image. Just like I can imagine him like screaming at the guy and punching him while on fire. Engravers, though, by the way, Well, they've got a point, I guess, but then they carve just the most random things, like a couple of trees on the walls. Like, yeah.
Trees. No, we talked about that. They have a little bit of thought behind what they do, but yeah, no.
I'm just going in circles.
I like
engravers. They're like free artists. You can't tell them what they have to engrave. You can just tell them to engrave, and they'll just.
Yeah, well, all of it's supposed to be like that. I mean, like when you improve an object, you can kind of give them general parameters, but then the guy will improve the object how he wants, like putting hanging rings on it or spikes or whatever. And they're all supposed to have freedom like that.
Then there's like those creepy sort of funny coincidences. Like there was that one time in, once again, Boat Murdered, where Sankus like drew some logs on the wall when the guy was trying to go look for wood. It's like, instead of real wood, he just finds a picture of logs. My favorite engravings, like I said, are like the tent. There was a dwarf and a tentacle demon. It's like the dwarf is striking a menacing pose, and the tentacle demon is making a plaintive gesture. I was imagining sort of like a cartoony shrug, like, wah, wah, wah.
That's funny. I should add more verbs there, because it's so easy to add those verbs in, because you just need to add the verb, right? It's really simple, but... I never get a chance to get back to it. I mean, I guess the problem that's hard is that you have to go back and then go to all of the historical events and then attach the verbs to them. It's like killing somebody could give you a plaintive gesture or refusing a trade deal or whatever. There's all kinds of things that you have to check. So
just the whole idea of plaintive gesture, though, is like frowning and shrugging, I guess. It's just like, oh, man.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's meant to be a little more sorrowful or whatever.
Yeah, it's just but, the wording though. It makes me think of just this. It's like, oh no, he's killing me. Oh well.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's funny. I'm looking at dictionary.com now, and or dictionary.reference.com or whatever. And the first definition says repining, complaining, lamenting. So lamenting, yeah. You know, or and then the second definition says expressive of sorrow or melancholy, mournful, sad. So I'm like, okay, so the guy's really sad. But then its example sentence here is it's not something like, you know, the widow was plaintive or whatever after her husband died. It would be a better sentence than that, but you know, not something that really had gravity to it.
Yeah.
But the quote here they've got, the example sentence is the most plaintive ditty. So that's what plaintive is. It's not, there's not a lot of gravity there.
Then there's things like elephants in the fetal position.
Yeah, I think it can put shit in the fetal position that was never born,
like,
and
how,
doesn't have the proper number of legs and so on.
How does a tentacle demon assume the fetal position?
People imagine tentacle demons in different ways. And if you look at the Raz, the tentacle demon is a humanoid with a bunch of tentacles coming out of his back.
Yeah.
But if you think of it, you could also think of it as kind of a Cthulhu thing, then, with a bunch of tentacles coming out of his mouth. If you didn't read the Raz,
like
with
big,
still a kind of humanoid
like
form, or just a big octopus or something. And so
it's just like one tentacle with eyes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Day of the Tentacle or whatever, some weird crap.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of possible interpretations. I mean, the Raz kind of tell you what it is, but. You know, looking at the Raz is kind of
messing with the Raz is always funny, no matter what you do.
Yeah, you're gonna have a lot more to mess with coming up. It's gonna
it's
be
like
crazy.
You make tentacle demons a playable race. That'd be great.
Yeah, but someone just did that. It was very strange what happened because
there was like that pit of like elves torturing.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what the heck happened there, but. It's very strange.
Yes, he was performing a depraved act. That's
yeah, no, that's kind of a disgusting location.
Yeah, well, you know, there's elves.
Elves on the ground.
Those elves, they're just creepy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy elves in their refusal to take wood.
Yeah, no, you can't take wood.
Darn elves. Everybody hates elves.
You're supposed to hate elves. That's what the dialogue is all about. When they make jokes about you guys being able to see eye to eye and all that kind of thing, all these short jokes.
How do you say this, liaison?
I don't really know how to say anything because I'm basically in my room all day on the internet or whatever and writing games and stuff. And I mean, so there's that movie Dangerous Liaisons. I think it's liaison.
Okay.
However, don't ask me.
Yeah.
Don't ask me.
It's like. Liaison, they like follow you around all the time. Even if your leader is just sort of like eating, he'll just be right there next to the table. You might want to have a meeting.
No, meetings are entirely degenerate at this point. This part of the problem is the code for that is really old, and it needs to be ripped up and completely. Changed into something else, and that's always a hard process to get.
Just make sure you use soap when you're ripping it out there.
Well, the dwarves should probably use soap to clean themselves before they go to a meeting, covered with blood
Will
and vomit, tattered
be able
clothes.
To use soap, like buy soap from a town and like wash off some of that vomit.
Yeah, or even just wash off the vomit to begin with. I don't remember if jumping in water actually helps at all, or if it just gives you a layer of water in addition to anything else.
It's like now you have wet vomit.
Sorry, the vomit is now damp.
Ew. I just like the idea of being able to drink water off of yourself.
Yeah, I don't know how well that would actually work. But yeah, currently it completely sates you when you do that or whatever. It makes you... unthirsty completely.
Yes.
Very strange.
The dwarf little icon, by the way, is pretty funny. Did you make that yourself?
So the one that just looks like a smiley face or whatever?
No, the little bearded one in full screen.
Oh, the little bearded one. So the one that looks like the regular smiley face with the beard on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one, I added the beard to the standard IBM code page smiley face. Yeah, I just drew a little beard on there to be funny, so that when people went to full screen, they'd see that. I thought it'd be especially funny if they had been playing in windowed mode before that, and they switch over to full screen. They've got a beard on them. But,
going back to a little bit earlier, Siege and Towers, like, will you ever be able to, like, catapult into a structure and have it collapse or whatever?
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, hopefully catapults, when the goblins and so on come with their new vehicle catapults that they can move around and point where they want to point them and then shoot them at people or shoot them at structures. The main idea would be to gain access to your fortress. Now, a lot of this is kind of pointless if your fortress is just carved into a mountain, unless they're just trying to cave you in.
Somebody actually had the idea in my little community thread of actually, like, hollowing out an entire mountain and, like, replacing all the walls of the mountain with constructions. It's like... You just have this big mountain fortress, and I was like, dude, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, people always undergo these large projects.
Construction takes a really long time. Are you ever going to have, like where you can drag walls and stuff instead of having to put, like...
So you mean long time in the sense not of the dwarf actually building it, but in the terms of the interface?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely we'd like to help people out there.
I think it should be like a designation sort of thing where you drag a little rectangle and then have them build that much wall or whatever.
No, there's small issues with connectivity and also the building material and so on that would need to be dealt with. But there's nothing insurmountable there. So certainly, I mean, you should be able to drag out giant walls and
starting
all
a
kinds
fortress on a glacier, by the way, is just like the worst thing that you can ever do. It's so bad. It's worse than a desert, really.
Yeah, just in terms of survivability, or what?
There's like nothing there. It's just all ice.
That's right. That's what glaciers are like. That.
Yeah.
Maybe you should have thought of that before you put a fortress there.
Well, I did. I did a little fortress called Echo Silver, and one of the things we did was put a statue next to the entrance, and then it just got covered with snow, so it was like, oh, I can't even find this statue anymore.
Yeah, no, I like making little ice statues and smoothing out an ice thing and putting ice statues on it above my entrance or whatever.
Oh, yeah, do you actually play Dwarf Fortress?
Not as much as I'd like to, but I get to play out the beginning quite a bit, because I always test things out and so on.
Like, you get to see all the crazy weird bugs, right?
Yeah, all kinds of weird stuff happen.
Has there been a crazy bug recently?
Let's see. Not with the squad stuff and entity positions, not really recently. The funniest ones were the ones that came from the healthcare recently that I put in the devlog.
Yeah.
Where the doctor diagnosed himself and then walked away or whatever.
I've got cancer. I'll just go over here.
Yeah, no, that was amusing. But these are this is all really boring. It's like, oh, the captain wasn't assigned correctly or whatever.
It's like the funniest, weirdest bug you've ever gotten.
I'm not good at those kind of favorites distinctions, when things were like exploding into boiling clouds of dwarf flesh when you'd make them because you screwed up a number or whatever. It's like all that material stuff that I did recently. Those are the ones that I kind of have in mind.
The whole idea of like a boiling, searing cloud of vomit is like the best thing.
It's really disgusting. I mean, I guess what would that actually be? I guess that would actually be boiling water and a bunch of burnt former food items and so on.
Just like vomit steam.
Yeah, some of this shit doesn't make any sense at all. But
your game is just disgusting.
It is disgusting. No, it's what happens when you put in a little bit too much of reality and then let people kind of do things without consequences.
You never really think about this sort of thing in, like, regular games or real life. It's like, well, yeah, I guess if you thought about it, if you did if you did slice somebody's head off, you would just have blood, like, all over you.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that people on the forums are just advocating the addition of poop and piss to the game.
Oh, God.
As something that the dwarves do all the time, and I'm like, well,
that's gonna be horrible.
Going to be in the sense if that happens.
Yeah, I mean, no. if that was implemented, there would just be. I can just foresee all this horrible, like, disgusting.
Well, yeah, there'd certainly be new fluid flow, and you'd have to channel it somewhere. And
wouldn't the elves get on you about that if you just, like, filtered all your crap into the water?
Yeah, I mean, imagine they get pissed off about it, but then you have to think, you know, where are they pooping the corpses they've been eating and stuff?
Oh, God.
I mean, there's got to be some rancid-ass dukes that come out of this thing.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, so
if that was implemented, which it probably won't be, because this is disgusting,
would
adventurers be able to do that?
Well, that's the thing. That's part of the problem, right? It's like, you have to go number two. It'll just, like, and it'll pop up a little warning at the bottom, and, like, I have a number two, you know, possibly in brown or something, like a flashing brown number two on the bottom, and you have to do something about it. And it's just, I mean, the thing where we might have something like that is during tracking, it's like, you found cougar sign.
Oh, yeah, cougar
and it's
sign.
Like, that's right. And then you can break apart the cougar sign and find little mouse bones and stuff like that, and you're like, yes.
It reminds me of the Dune sort of thing, worm sign. It's just just a little signpost that says worm.
That's right. So that's kind of like in terms of practically what we're definitely thinking about doing, definitely a sign like that. I mean, we had this idea about maybe having the sewers in the game just kind of have, because you got to have sewers in a fantasy game, right? Especially in human towns that you go to adventure or whatever. And
spelunking down there.
That's right, and then you might find like some random substance down there. It's like night soil or whatever.
Or a dragon.
A sewer dragon.
Oh, God.
The brown dragon. Brown dragon has a particular breath weapon.
It's just all these sort of disgusting opportunities that you could add in here.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're going for being disgusting, there's certainly lots of opportunities here. I mean, boiling cloud of filth, boiling cloud of unknown substance. We've already got these things in the game.
Just go down to the sewers and find a kidney just sitting there.
Yeah, I don't know why I would be there. So I guess if I had a kidney, I might think about flushing it down the toilet if it was small enough.
It's like, oh no, I gotta get rid of this kidney. what am I gonna do with this? One of the things I've noticed is that as an adventurer going into a town, there's usually all the time, there'll be like a crossbowman or whatever, and he's like, he's apparently injured because you can hear like all that weird little warnings, like
yeah.
He gives into pain or whatever, and I can never find him, and I have no idea what happened to him.
Because in adventure mode, there's those giant apartment complexes or whatever and stuff, and it can be difficult to find someone. You have to go up to like the third floor. This guy injured there or whatever.
Oh, Madman has to go. Well, it's not like you're contributing a lot.
Yeah, I know. I really just don't have it in me today. Sorry.
Yeah, well, now weren't you all going to be talking to somebody named Blueberry after this?
Yeah, I think that'll probably have to happen tomorrow.
I can't see. It's funny because I can't actually do tomorrow. Listen,
I gotta go. This will be good enough.
I'm like walking out the door right now. All right.
Okay. See you later.
All right. Yeah. See you. Bye bye.
No, I'm going to make this a little bit longer because I want to be able to listen to this by myself and sort of just be amused. that's what I did with my last podcast. I've listened to it like four times already.
Yeah, it can be fun to go back and revisit.
I like listening to people talk. It's pretty cool. What was I talking about? It's just these weird injured people like walking around. It's like, oh no, he's lost his rope reed sandal. I guess that means his his leg fell off.
Yeah, no, it's completely bizarre how it puts equipment on them as if they weren't injured, But the pain keeps on coming for their entire life. That part is fixed now. So,
it's just that
but
weird,
their rope reed sandal will still fall off.
That's just the most depressing thing to see, like a dog that keeps giving into pain, just goes unconscious every couple minutes.
Yeah, no, it's real life is kind of depressing, and this one is actually worse than real life in a sense because they keep on hurting and so on.
Just endless pain. Oh God, suffering. It's like, as an adventurer, you can see all the crap that people do to you. It's like, he smashes your face in.
No, that was kind of the thing I was talking about before with the cyberpunk and so on, and to continue that, it's like, I went back and played some of these games. Like, I went back and played some games that I owned, like Fantasy and, Wizard's Crown it didn't have specific injuries to body parts. It had you attacking body parts, but then you'd get these things like serious injuries. You'd have a serious injury number that couldn't be repaired without some really powerful spells and so on. So there's kind of these, I was looking back because I used to chalk it up to the pen and paper games like Cyberpunk, and I still do for the most part, but there were a few games, that we played. I didn't actually play Fantasy until much later, so that one didn't count, even though you can get your limbs chopped off and stuff there. That was way after we were writing games like that. But Wizard's Crown we were playing before we were, or at the same time we were writing these early basic games, because I've been writing basic games for as long as I can remember. And, so aside from just the violent movies we were watching as little kids and the pen and paper games that we were doing, there were a few games that might have had something to do with, all the developments of these crazy injury systems.
It's pretty bad though, like when a dwarf gets injured, he has to go sit in bed and then everybody forgets to bring him water and he's just sort of sitting there slowly wasting away.
Yeah, no, it's pretty disgusting, pretty screwed up. It's only going to be worse now because now they can get things like compound fractures and like having a piece of bone sticking out of their arm and stuff.
Are they ever going to have cancer?
We considered things like that. It's like when you get into especially the old age part of the game. Right now, it's just like your time has come and pop, you're dead or whatever.
Yeah.
But there could be a sense of just greater illnesses coming on and so on, and that's probably how it should be.
STD because, sort of thing, like when you're a dwarf.
It's one of those, some of those sex things are going to be probably the least explored part of the game or whatever. But this because that's how society is or whatever, at least over here. But with getting older and stuff, especially because becoming sick and kind of having, say, an infirm older ruler, that's a common theme in a lot of kind of myths and fantasy stories and so on.
Babbling madmen.
Yeah. We have babbling madmen already, though.
I love those.
They don't babble, though. They just kind of, it says that they are, but you should be able to check out what they're saying.
Yeah, you should. That would be cool. You should make like a random babble generator. It's like they're talking about cheese.
Yeah. They could go back and look at the historical events they were involved with, and look at their preferences and so on, and say some relevant babble, and then there could be irrelevant babble.
Oh, so it's like he's actually talking about something, but like nobody's listening. So it's like, oh, he's babbling.
Yeah, well, I guess if someone had the right personality traits, they could just stop by and listen for a while. Just want to, the guy could get a bunch of people falling around if his babble is coherent, and
so,
he could start a cult or something.
About parties, at statuaries and things like that.
That's right.
I know that they get like bonuses to their sort of diplomacy stats from parties, right?
Yeah.
But is that actually affected by anything? Like which stat gets upgraded at the party,
So we had discussed this in reference to specific things, like the mayor or whoever does it calming people down, and then it looks at their personality and says,
right,
and the task and says whether or not they're lying or whether or not they're better negotiating. So during a general conversation, all of the skills come into play, but they're still
lying.
There's people that bullshit at parties all the time. Yeah, no, there's guys that go to parties and bullshit and stuff. No, that's definitely
instead of putting on his little profile that he's tall and handsome, a dwarf just puts that he's short and has a long beard.
Like, yeah, well, he could try and pass that off at the party. It might not be successful. He's like, my beard's long. It's like, no, it's not. It's short. It's like, my beard's long. He's like, yeah, little bastard. But yeah, no, so during the conversation, it's exactly like the mayor part or whatever, except the task is general. So then it just looks at their personality. And basically all that determines, I guess, is mostly the lying thing. It's like whether or not they're a blunt person or whether or not they're a person who thinks that a certain amount of deception is standard for human events, which isn't really a value judgment. It's like some people think it's better to let people down easy and so on. And that's a skill you have to develop.
But good and bad dwarves, like somebody who has like a malicious sort of outlook on life or whatever?
Yeah, this is something that we're thinking about because we have the personalities. Whoa, feedback.
Yeah, that was
yeah, but we have the personalities and they are none of them, I mean it's arguable about the lying, but really none of them have a value judgment associated to them.
Yeah.
And so there's also this new thing about the there's a new thing about the there's kind of this weird burp coming on that didn't actually come to fruition, but there's this the ethics that are now in the entities, right? And that concerns what they think about, what their society thinks about a number of issues. But then there could be something additional about that, about personal ethics, and that can control kind of more what you're saying. And so we were thinking about doing that, and we're not quite sure how that's going to come into play yet.
Because, I mean, like, the people that are, like, thrown in jail right now, they're just for no real good reason. It's just like, he didn't make me a toy forge or whatever. And it's like, oh, come on, that's my best jeweler. You just put him in jail because he didn't make you a mini forge.
Yeah, yeah, there's no bona fide dwarven criminals right now.
Yeah.
So if one of your guys was a closet serial killer or something, that would certainly be an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Especially if you couldn't catch him until you, like, caught him in the act or something.
Yeah, that'd be interesting and also, I guess, kind of annoying. But that's
part of the game is all of the annoying problems that you have to deal with day to day life.
That's part of running a big fortress, is that there's going to be just some asshole who's just going to bring it all down because he's mean.
Yeah, yeah. Although the way that people deal with that by just crushing them under bridges and stuff, I mean, that should probably have some ramifications too.
Like, I don't want to be live in a fort where people are crushing each other under bridges. That'd be kind of depressing. There should probably be some emigration at that point.
I can imagine like assassinations of nobles. Like some guy's like, oh man, I'm so tired of him asking for red spinal items or whatever, and it's like, I'll just throw him off this bridge.
Yeah, that came up on the Future of the Fortress thread recently, because people were wondering what the hell the Royal Guard is for, because they don't actually guard the guy from anything. Because right now there's just a gang of guys that wander around with a tax collector ransacking people's rooms. But, yeah.
Yeah. And nobles have pretty specific room requirements, don't they? It's like I want to have a rope reed item. It's like what kind of rope reed item?
at least the demands themselves don't have to be met. The only danger there is kind of a tantrum spiral or whatever when the noble starts getting really angry. But
and there's like the hammerer. It just takes your dwarves and executes them because they like exported red spinal items when they weren't supposed to. What is
that? Yeah, that the hammer originated in the very first. It was not basic drag slay. It was sea drag slay. It was the first one with the hammer because the sea drag slay, it had two kind of incarnations, but the first one was a very linear game. You'd start in a town. And the town would have six buildings or so in it. There'd be a temple where you could get yourself healed. Okay. So there'd be a temple. you could heal yourself. There'd be a bar where you could go and play poker and try and get some money. And there could be bar fights and so on there, and then you get arrested, thrown in jail. And there were a number of other stores and things, but the relevant part with the bar, you could get arrested, and then depending on your crimes, they might just take your money or something. But if you ever got up to the level of receiving punishment, physical punishment, then it would depend on the town you were in, because in this linear game, you start at a town, you do like three encounters with monsters, yeah. Then you go to a town, then you do three encounters with monsters, then you go to a town, then three encounters with monsters, then a big monster, then you go to a town in a different region where everything's harder. And it was just kind of this linear thing. That was the really early version of Dragslay. The later version of Sea Dragslay had an overland map and all kinds of other stuff. But this was the first incarnation of the Sea version of Dragslay at that. And the point I'm getting to, though, is that when you get arrested and have committed a serious enough crime to warrant physical punishment, it would depend on your town. If you were in a human town, you got the Lasher, and he would whip you a certain number of times. If you're in Elven town, you got, I don't even remember if he had a name, but he beat you with a staff.
A bard that just sort of plays annoying music at you.
Yeah, no, that actually beat you with a cane, but it didn't do as much damage. And then in the dwarf town, there was the hammerer. So it's like you never, when you were playing the game, you never stopped to screw around the bars in a dwarven town, because if there was a bar fight because someone accused you of cheating at poker, even if you didn't.
You could actually play poker in it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting. I want to try this game out. Is it available anywhere?
No, unfortunately, because the only version that exists is the new one where you could wander around the world map. And, of course, all of these games, I ran them into the ground, right? That's why I had to start a new one. And so it doesn't work. I mean, it would be a project, like a month-long project or something to fix it up.
Right.
And so I haven't undergone that. I haven't really thought about just releasing it to people to fix, but it's kind of a mess. It really is just a mess. So I'm not sure, but nothing's come of that so far.
Will that sort of idea ever come into a adventurer mode, like going around and in towns and being more than just this weird sort of godlike adventurer who just kills people?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the whole point is to be part of the world and not be some kind of weird thing. So, you know, talking to people, doing things for people, going to bars and hanging out, all of that is fair game. And we're kind of having fun with the notion of the games that you'd play. Cause Dragslay had poker cause it was easy to come up with how that would work and the AI.
Generate hands, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then you could play poker. You could put down cards, take new cards, and they kind of knew the rules for the odds roughly. I mean, they weren't great at it, but they could play their hands all right. I mean, they weren't really good at it, but then they'd either accuse you of cheating or so on, and especially if you won a lot from them at once and so on. And there were some rules for that, and then you get into those bar fights and so on. But what I, for this game, what I was considering doing is having a random game generator. And so it could come up with pieces and rules. Now the pieces could be like chess pieces, or they could be like cards.
Since it's like a different world with a different history, they came up with these different games, right?
Yeah, it could be all kinds of different stuff. And so what I can do is I can base the rules on games that exist, and then try and branch out from that as much as possible. Because I don't want the random game generator to come with a game that doesn't make sense because you win it on your first move, or it's obvious that one opponent is going to win, or it has inconsistencies that make the rules kind of impossible or circular or whatever. So there's going to need to be work done. And starting from games that exist, like poker and chess and Go and all that kind of thing, you can attain this, right, by changing the rules
and so on. Would there ever be sort of like a chess game that also includes cards or something?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, is that you'd be able to do whatever the hell you want.
That's crazy.
And then you could definitely play them, but the problem is then what's the AI like, right?
Right.
Because the AI is going to be trashy on a game where you can't specifically program to it. But I was looking some stuff up, and... There's some interesting things that people have been doing with Go lately with these Markov chain or whatever, I forgot what they're called, damn it. It was some probabilistic type term like that. It was something. I got the name for it. But anyway, what I did is during one of my month-end days, I actually took time to write it was a tic-tac-toe style game, except it was on like a 9x9 board or seven. I don't remember if it was 7x7 or 9x9.
Yeah.
And it was you had to get four in a row. And so that's a little more interesting than regular tic-tac-toe. I don't know how much more interesting because I don't have a lot of experience with the game itself. But I taught them how to play it without teaching them anything beyond what moves they're allowed to make by using this process. And they got pretty good at it.
So it's
possible to make not a genius level AI or not like Chess Master Edition 10 AI. It's possible to make an AI that can not necessarily really challenge you if you get good at the game, but not make stupid moves all the time.
So there would be like different people that had different skill levels in these games that are generated?
Yeah. You could do that based on how much, how far down the game tree you allow them to play and that kind of thing. The thing that's a little more difficult is giving them personalities, like this guy's an aggressive player, this guy's a defensive player.
I can imagine like somebody who's like really good at the game, but he pretends not to be. He's like a hustler, you know? He steals money.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You go in a beginner level type thing. It's like, I'll go. I'm not very good at this game, whatever. And you're like, oh, okay. I'm just gonna bet a whole bunch of money. And he's like, oh, I actually am. that would be horrible, but good.
Yeah. So that.
Because then you could kill him and start a bar fight. It's just so many things could happen from this game thing.
No, it's one of those things that we're looking forward to adding, and it's also one of those things where getting a simple version of it up doesn't require, you know, that much work, especially if we don't go that far afield with the games. And we can kind of, I mean, it would kind of be better to get it in a little earlier so that we can get feedback and tweaks on it. But
that would probably give some sort of purpose to adventure mode. You just sit around playing randomly.
Yeah. Instead of going off and killing everybody in the world, you could just be a hustler or something.
And there would also be a point to those town halls where people just sort of stand around.
There's a whole series of bloats on making those bars more interesting, and it all comes from that original Drag Slay game where we had that. But
that's just really cool, because I can imagine all these different sort of rule sets that you could have for card games.
It's really a thing that it's the limit is going to be how good can the AI be? Is it always going to be so trashy for a complicated game that there's not much point? And so my next phase with that, with my little test bed thing I have going where I was testing that tic-tac-toe game, would it be to put in something like the rules of chess?
Yeah.
And see if it does. I mean, I'm not a good chess player, but
me neither.
I'm good enough that I understand when someone really sucks.
Yeah.
It's like I don't remember what I was on Chess World. I was like 1600 on Chess World.
The good chess
players. So I can kind of understand.
The good chess players, they have all these like strategies for it, and it's like, well, that kind of takes the fun out of it, doesn't it?
I never did like memorizing openings, and you have to do that.
Same thing with like Rubik's cubes. Like you have all these patterns to do. And it's like, well, then what's the point?
Yeah. Well, the Rubik's cube is even worse to me. But yeah,
I agree.
Exactly. And what is my problem? But let me try and fix myself here for a second. My main quibble though with this AI method is that you can't give them personalities.
Right.
Now we may find that it's possible to give them personalities because the rules have certain content within a rule itself or the nature of a piece itself, especially if you're deriving from existing games like chess and so on,
right.
some of the things have a nature to them that can be conveyed on top of this AI, like which nodes and which types of pieces they like to play.
Yeah.
And certainly things like they like to play with their knights instead of their bishops.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of rule is easy to impart because you just favor those tree nodes.
Well, you could also put in like the default personality traits, and then they'll just like insult you while you're playing the game or whatever. Or like depending on whether they're like an asshole or a good person, they'll be like, "Oh, you suck," or like, "Oh, that was a pretty good move you made there."
Yeah. Okay. So the thing I was thinking of was Monte Carlo. Things in UCT trees and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was thinking about. And the nice thing about that, they've actually increased the level of the best Go AIs in the world with that. They actually started beating professionals a little bit now, because they were never able to do that before. But I think they managed to do some things in limited sense with that. But it increased, and the interesting thing is that it's without teaching it anything about Go at all, except for the rules.
Right.
It's like no strategy, no openings, no what shapes are best, and all that kind of thing.
So from this sort of random game generator, would there ever be something like weird, like Monopoly or something?
It's whatever you want to teach it to do, right? Because you're when you have a random generator, It's unless you really try and cut it loose, it's going to do the things that you want it to do in the categories that you want it to do them in.
Well, I mean,
if you address Monopoly, it does Monopoly. If you tell it to make card games, it makes card games according to the rules that you allow it to use. Now, if you try and say just do completely random rules, like if you use piece A on piece B, then they lose 10 points, and if they, you know, they can claim board squares, you know, half the time for this or that. The game ends up being random. Yeah.
I wouldn't imagine there would be very complex games in bars anyway.
Yeah.
Like you're supposed to play Monopoly while you're drunk. It's not going to work.
Yeah, I don't know. There's some things like when you've just got like Mahjong tables around and stuff. I don't know if people get drunk when they're playing that, but it is kind of a social game. And I mean, it's not like it's not complicated. It's pretty complicated.
Right.
So it depends. It's a cultural thing. It's like if dwarves always hang out playing Tacticus in the meeting hall. Yeah, Tacticus was the original name for this, and the Power Goals this process. But it was just a joke.
Because Tacticus is a thing on the forums.
That's where it came from, is the Power Goals.
Oh man, I love that game. It's so hilarious. Have you ever seen the weird little games of Tacticus on the forums?
That's based on some actual game. I forgot what they're called though. It's cool. We really can go anywhere. This is why I'm kind of excited about this. But is there, you can really go any direction you want with it.
Well, I mean, will there be like a little sort of booklet that you have to read before?
Something like, I mean, it will be able to, because it has to come up with the rules and so on, it will be able to convey to you what they are, and we'll have to do that. Or, I mean, it would be cool in adventure mode if someone taught you how to play it or whatever.
Well, it could be just like the weird smiling guy who deals you cards and won't tell you the rules of the game.
Yeah, you shouldn't put money on that then.
there is actually a card game called Mao where it's like the whole point is that you never know what the rules are, and it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, again, I wouldn't put money on that game if I were playing. It can do things, and things like hidden mechanics and so on, it's all possible.
There's like that thing in checkers where they're like, well, I can jump all of your guys like this. And I was like, what?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
There be like sharks and hustlers and things and stuff like that?
Ideally cheating and so on, and people that make a living off of it. It's not the highest priority, of course, aside from the actual system itself, but
I just think that would make the town a lot more interesting.
Yeah, no, you need to have a lot of scum in a town, that's for sure.
Plus,
especially a larger town.
Are you ever going to do anything more with the temples? Because, like, right now, they're just...
Of course, yeah. They suck right now.
Because
pretty...
right now, they're
They're absolutely pointless right
just
now.
Just, like, weird empty buildings. Like, they don't hold services, they don't do anything, they just walk around in circles.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's part of this... It was actually tied into the magic system in a way... Not in the way of like a priest in D&D, but just in the sense of ritual and the sense of rituals with people doing things together in a concerted way.
Right.
And that's the kind of stuff that I was kind of talking about with meetings being really old code and even parties being really old code. I'd like to tear all that up and put in a system that can accommodate parties, magic events, religions, meetings,
comic
where it's just yeah, anything where you get a bunch of people together that are kind of following
that would be actually pretty cool.
Ritual
like,
order,
like some dwarf makes this like pamphlet that has all these engravings in it. It's like a comic about elephants or whatever. And people
well, they can certainly get into figurine painting and stuff because they've got all these figurines and stuff.
Man,
and that's another thing.
That gives me an idea. What if dwarves are playing D&D?
Yeah, role playing, the invention of role playing. It's possible. Dwarves are dwarves. You don't have to stick to the timeline on that. But another interesting thing about the chess type thing and so on is just the nature of the pieces, because every chess piece has its own character, right?
Right.
So you could have a Tacticus board, for example, if that version of Tacticus happened to be a board game. You could have a Tacticus board, and each of the pieces could have their own nature, but then a guy could make a masterpiece Tacticus board, and it could describe each of the pieces in detail,
like those chess boards where it's like crazy detailed figurines.
And the figurines might not have anything to do with a knight or whatever, but they just look different, and that could be there could be an extent to which.
Will there be those like crazy glass chess sets or whatever?
Make them out of glass, right?
Yeah.
You make glass, you make them out of glass, you make them out of soap, if you're in prison especially.
Yeah, will the board games always be called like Tacticus, or will there be called
No. That's just the power goal,
yeah.
So that people know what we're talking about. We always just called it Tacticus, but no, there's no, they'll be given names.
They be like Slipshire, the Hooves of Beating, or whatever?
Well, we try to name things. I like the gods. There's a new trend in naming to actually have the names kind of make sense.
Okay.
Who knows? See, the thing with board games, though, is they all have kind of weird little names. And so it's not like the way we've been doing names in general kind of doesn't work. It's like they might even invent new words. Or even chess or whatever. I mean, we might even need to invent, so right now, the Dwarven language is it has the English version of the word, and then it has the Dwarven version of the word, right? So the Dwarven version of the word, those were generated according to rules, like which vowel frequencies there are and which consonants are allowed to go together and all that kind of thing. It generates words, but then I went through and kind of hand-checked them to make sure it didn't generate words like Pepsi Cola or something like that, and also to check them for tone. So that an evil word just sounded, at least to Western ears, more evil because it's got more O's and O's and stuff like that. The low vowels and so on. And so those kind of rules, I went through and did that. I didn't do it for Goblin because I wanted to sound kind of alien, but I did it for the other three. And the idea then is that they should be able to use those rules I used in that generator to come up with just a name for a board game that sounds dwarven but doesn't need to mean anything. So the elves could have a board game that they call like Billy Bidai or whatever, and the dwarves would have like Armagog or whatever. And then
wouldn't dwarves like make this weird game that nobody could pronounce, like Rescue Frumjallbakvallag?
Well, that's exactly what we're talking about with the rules about vowels and putting consonants together, is that they'd actually sound like the rest of the dwarven words.
Oh, okay.
Because all the dwarven words were generated by this system. The main problem that's not really surmountable in any way is when in a random world they create a game called shit or something, right? It's like, yeah, this game's called shit, and we play it with pieces of soap and so on.
Soap.
Yeah, yeah. You want to kind of use pieces of soap when you're playing shit because it makes you feel kind of dirty. That's the kind of problem. But it's not really a big problem. It's not going to happen that often. You just have to watch out for it. Or not. And so in that way, we can have dwarves create nonsense words for things. They can even come up with nicknames for each other or whatever, and base them on the dwarven language, but not actually have them make sense. On the other hand, you could have board games that are called, like, you know, whatever, like hammers and crosses or whatever, and then they'd just be named like that. That's right. It's an agrarian board game, but I'm not sure that the dwarves. Well, the dwarves are kind of commies at first, but then it all changes.
It is a monarchy, isn't it, that they have?
It is. Although at the outpost, it isn't really observed until later on.
Yeah.
And then it's a monarchy. So the dwarves still have a monarchy in the new version. The humans have kind of this, they don't have a civilization-level government. It's just kind of whoever can unite the cities can call themselves whatever they want. Yeah, and then he can come up with a name for his own position. That's not in yet. Hopefully that makes it when I do that.
Adjudicator.
That's exactly what it'll be like, and hopefully it'll be badass. And the goblins are that way with everything. Goblin society is essentially like prison or something.
Do goblins have like a society type thing?
They do. They're intelligent, and the problem is that they don't have any kind of altruistic feelings. And so it's difficult for them to work for others and so on. And so it's it ends up being kind of a might makes right thing. But they're also tolerant of each other's stuff in a kind of libertarian way or whatever. So that if you're off doing, you know, whatever to whoever, like if a goblin decides to keep another goblin as a slave.
And do depraved acts upon it.
Whatever, yeah. Again, we're thinking of this like prison.
Which
so
a great item, of course.
Yeah, well, you know, stuff happens. Sometimes you can't, you know, you gotta do things vicariously. But the goblin, whoever's doing whatever to whoever, just you know, keeping a slave, killing somebody, stealing things from somebody, the rest of the goblins are like, well, you know, he had the power to do that. And, you know, that's fine.
So I've been in a goblin tower and they just leave crap lying around, don't they?
They do. There's crap all over the place. And the more you kill, the more they'll scatter crap all over the place because you killed them and they didn't clean up after each other and so on. But everything's like that in this game right now.
The fun thing is starting a dwarf fortress on a goblin tower. It's just hilarious. I remember one time I was just up in the hills next to a goblin tower and everybody was like, oh no, goblins!
Yeah, that's too much.
You did fix the thing where, like, a dwarf would be, like, way up on a mountain and he would be scared by something way below him. Right.
I've fixed some bugs with that respect. However, there's still some weird things going on, especially with unseen stuff. Like they were seeing shit through walls and stuff. I don't even know what's going on there. They're not supposed to be able to do that because it's supposed to do a line of sight check on them, and it hasn't been for whatever reason. That there's bugs all over the place. The game's got like 500 bugs.
They just put the paintings up or like the engravings, but they have eye holes on them. You know, like in Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, you never know with these guys. Never know.
So eventually there is a king that comes to your dwarven.
Yeah, two ways to get the king. You either find the special adamantine stuff down below, and then the king will disguise himself as a peasant. King or queen will disguise him or herself as a peasant and come and just hang out there. But be a kind of a demanding dickhead nonetheless, but won't come with their whole entourage of demanding dickheads, right?
So I am a peasant. Do not export Red's final items.
Yeah. And in the 2D version, they had these mining mandates where they're like, dig deeper to the right, dig deeper to the right, dig deeper to the right. And, just so that you would lose the game eventually. But now I don't think they do anything interesting. They just sit there and wait to die.
Yeah, I'm a king.
Yeah, no, it should get way more cool later when you're actually allowed to control parts of the Dwarven Empire and draft huge armies
well,
and do all
those,
whatever.
Then those things like the Bronze Colossus, and you just put it in a cage. And it's like, oh, look, it's the Bronze Colossus Zoo.
Yeah, of course, the cage trap is, when we speak of nerfing traps, that's obviously one of the things that's going to go during the sieges is, I mean, there'll be cage traps, but cage traps, cages might actually be one of the things in the game that suddenly get an associated size or something.
Yeah.
Because right now, there's no sizes, you can stick a dragon, and even if you could put a dragon in a metal cage, there's the whole wooden cage, dragon a wooden cage problem, and
in a soap cage.
Yeah, soap cages or whatever you want to do. All kinds of torment there. That just sucks.
Or, of course, the water cage.
That's right, water cages. There's water cages if you freeze some vomit.
Oh, God.
Now, you can't actually turn globs into items, fortunately, but you could always add a new reaction now that let you turn a glob into a bar and then...
Isn't there, like, an ichor material or something?
Who? What?
Ichor.
Yeah. I'm just not used to pronunciation like that.
Yeah.
Because who knows how to pronounce words these days. But it depends on the blood type of the creature. There's that, there's goo, there's slime, you can have vomit blood.
Goo.
Now in the new version, you can have whatever the hell you want. Anything. Any material you would care to name or come up with, you could have soap blood, you could have boiling soap blood.
Well, that would be pretty useful. It would just clean out the wound automatically. It's like, no more infections for me. I bleed soap.
That's right. You could also secrete soap, spit soap, breathe a cloud of boiling soap.
Oh, that would be pretty useful. It's like the most clean race in existence, even though they don't take baths because they sweat soap forever.
Yeah, I guess if you got something that breathes a vapor of soap that isn't boiling, you could just kind of shove it on your shower head and sit there and have it spray at you or whatever. So there's all kinds of options in life.
Then there's the whole idea of dwarves being able to harness little imps and things, like the fire imp or whatever the heck that is.
Yeah. You can... I mean, if you want to set a fire in your fortress, you could use them for that right now.
Yeah.
But
is a fire imp?
Oh, it's just a little guy that lives in the lava. I don't know.
As opposed to a magma man, who is a big guy that lives in the lava.
Well, magma man is made out of magma. A fire imp could still have flesh. It's just resistant to heat.
Oh, I see.
And the magma man is a magma man. Yeah, fire imp isn't necessarily a moving thing made out of fire, whereas a spirit of fire is more like that, although there's no finalized decisions.
Well, then wouldn't an olm man be made out of olms?
See, that's one possible interpretation, but there's all sorts of mans in this game. This game is all about having different kinds of mans. And there's the animal people
Pokemans.
There are no Pokemans except in the, there's probably a mod for it. But the animal peoples are going to be one of the major players in the world. And the animal peoples make up all the different animal mans. But the elemental mans or the material mans, they have no explanation associated to them right now.
It's just like a vomit man.
Yeah, vomit man. Soap mans and alcohol mans.
I'm just going to soap into everything.
Blood mans and hair mans.
Ew.
And
he forms out of the lint in your shower.
Yeah, like scab mans and stuff. There's all kinds of opportunities for disgusting crap, but right now we've only taken the simple options. Mud and magma and iron and fire.
Iron mans? There are iron mans in this game?
There are iron mans in this game. They're pretty hard because they're made out of iron. It's not even hollow. Whack.
Do they ride iron horses?
No, there are no iron horses no more, but we could put in iron horses again.
That'd be sad.
Of course, before we do that, we need horsemen.
Right, horsemen. He could be the knight in the chess game.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it would be awesome to have an animal people's chess set.
Would there ever be, a designation for you to make actual, arenas? People actually make those little gladiator things right now.
Yeah, I've been really happy with how far people have been able to take that and succeed with the arena concept without any arena concept. But I think eventually, they're depending on what dwarves think about it, and we haven't really thought about it that much, so I can't say anything final, but certainly in human towns, because humans love that crap, there'd be arenas that are actually thought of as arenas. We have some power goals for that, and
that one would of the be like more, That would be, like, more entertaining than just standing around in a statuary.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a dwarf that likes to see shit die, then if there's no hammering that day, maybe going to the arena would be a thing you could do.
Oh, are they entertained by hammerings?
I don't think so. I was just saying if we have people entertained by the arena in the future, well, they should probably be entertained by the hammer as well.
Well, then you've got to start having like dwarf spectator sports. Like,
yeah, I think with the hammer right now, it's actually much the opposite. People would be horrified by the sight of death.
Right. I can imagine dwarves playing cricket. That'd just be hilarious. How would dwarves play basketball? It's just like these, I guess, really low hoops. And rocks.
Rocks. Bouncing rocks. Bouncing rocks.
Or cats.
It's true. That's true. You could dribble it once.
But only once.
Then it turns into soccer.
Oh, no.
You can keep going. It's unfortunate.
Well, then there's... That reminds me, tracking mud and blood and, like, organs and stuff through the fortress.
That's right.
Will that be another application? Will there be, like, janitor dwarves in the future?
Right now, all dwarves can take cleaning jobs right now. Whether or not that should be a skilled task, I mean, there's some skill associated with that.
But can that actually include cleaning, like, blood off the floor?
They do it. It's just so haphazard the way they do it now. When a dwarf takes a cleaning job, they will go to the location and clean up absolutely everything in a little 3x3 around them. But they aren't very good at taking those jobs. There's something wrong with that. Yeah, no, they are lazy, and I think they only search nearby squares or something. There's some problem. I forgot exactly what the issue is.
Well, then people have these poor little dwarves in these just like little 2x1 rooms. It's just like, oh, well, I'm going to make this very efficient. You will all have tiny little diagonal rooms.
Well, how small is small? I mean, we don't really know the size of a dwarven, like the size of a tile. If it's a dragon, I mean, I'd be happy to have a room the size of two dragons.
Right.
Or is it really the size of 7 or 8 dragons? You put them on the ground. But they have a lot of floor space.
I mean, it's like all they have in the little room is like a chest and a bed.
Yeah. No, it's, although what kind of living can you expect living in a mountain?
Right.
Yeah, but no, they should get a little pissed off about that kind of thing eventually.
They do get allergies to the sun, right? Cave sickness.
Yeah, cave sickness they get when they stay in the cave for a year. They become allergic to the sun for a while.
And then just start vomiting.
Yeah, there's a lot of vomit. There's
just like a random guy in boat murdered who just kept vomiting outside the fortress.
it's a disgusting game, but. Oh, man.
What kind of abomination have you made? All these Ohms walking around. Are there actually Ohms or just Ohm Mans?
There are Ohms, Ohm Men, and Giant Ohms.
then there's the Cave Swallow, and that doesn't really ever seem like a very fearsome creature to me until I actually...
Well, there are Cave Swallows, the vermin kind, the little dots, and then there are Giant Cave Swallows, which might be what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's
then there are, then there are Cave Swallow Men.
Are you serious?
I'm absolutely serious. How could you have a game without Cave Swallow Men? I mean, every animal in the game is at least a candidate for becoming an animal person.
Yeah.
I think they might be the only bird men in the game, but that's all right.
That's interesting. What do they look like then?
The funny thing about Cave Swallow Men, this is kind of amusing for them right now, is that they basically look like birds still because they don't have any arms. They still have wings. So I guess they've got really manly looking legs or something.
They're very buff. I just looked up an Ohm and wow, they're nothing like I thought they were.
Yeah, an Ohm is interesting. Someone actually emailed me and was like advocating to put the Ohm in the game. That was a while ago, and like a long while ago. And I was like, all right, yeah, that looks like a great creature to put in the game. And so I kind of surprised him by putting in giant Ohms and Ohm Men as well at the same time.
Yeah, then an Ohm Man would look just...
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dear Tarn Adams, I think you should put dwarves in this game. That would be so cool.
That's right.
Will dwarves ever become, like, literate and start, like, writing books?
Absolutely. Go on DevNext again. And now DevNext means the stuff coming in like 8 years instead of 25, but the all the same. Yeah, that's right. Ambitious and stuff. I got nothing else to live for. So the language improvements, there's the language improvement sections at the bottom of DevNext. First is a basic rewrite of names. Because right now the names are stuck in a very particular format, right? You have your first name, which comes from a word in the language but doesn't really interpret it as meaning anything. Then there's your last name, like Grave Digger or whatever. And then there's the part of your name, the something, and then the of something right. part of your name, right? And there could be adjectives, up to two adjectives in front of the part, right? So that is the form of all the names. And so what we require is a basic rewrite in terms of like syntax trees or something to support different phrases, so that people can talk about the battle of the something forest rather than not being able to talk about that because it's not supported. So there's going to be a rewrite to support that first.
Or just tell you about their cousin who got married and then died.
Yeah. This is all, it's always so depressing. It comes back to depressing things. So that's the first rewrite. The second is to come up with, for the phrases, when you see the phrase written in the Dwarvish language, to have the abstract syntax tree be realized in different forms for the different languages. So dwarves might have a verb final language and other languages might be SVO or something or whatever. And there's millions of different things about grammar, so we can just do whatever we want.
Right.
And then the next stage is that once you've got it written in a certain order, that means that you can do their writing and their writing will be distinctive. And so we could draw them out written forms, but maybe involve expanding the tiles a bit. Now, none of these things are necessarily in order. You can do books a little bit before this, but the last thing in the language improvement section is new objects which support this writing, like books and songs, poems, and associated skills. So, yeah, they're definitely going to become literate, and they're going to become literate.
They don't have printing presses or anything, do they? So would it say,
they might have to illuminate like monks or whatever.
This book is in such bad handwriting that you can't even read it.
Absolutely, yeah. No, we wrote a little wizard game a long time ago, had the different spell books and things that you found would all have been written by another wizard, and the quality of the writing had a lot to do with how well you could learn from the book and so on.
Is that an A or is that an S?
Yeah, it could be that bad. I mean, it'd be cool to have tiles for the language, so the dwarf language looks a certain way, but then to distort the tiles according to the bad handwriting or whatever. But that's all.
One of them's upside down.
It's like, yeah, this guy was kind of an idiot. This guy put curly Q's on all of his letters or whatever.
He was a farmer. And,
yeah, damn. But the farmer's gonna write. I'm just gonna write these days anyway.
Farmer. All he does is like stand around and look at fields.
Yeah, dwarven farming isn't really an intense job for most season. But yeah, that's another thing we're planning on fixing. I think that made the top 10. I don't remember as far as suggestions. So, farming improvements. And when they said in the suggestion farming improvements, basically that meant make farming a lot harder. So. It'll be cool to do that. We had a lot of ideas for that, and they've come up with more of them on the suggestions forum. So it should be really intense.
You'll need to teach your dwarves how to do genetic engineering so that they can have the plants be more resistant to pests.
Yeah, right now the only stuff with genetics in the new version is going to be the critters. So, but hopefully in the new version, assuming everything works out fine, you'd be able to make a dog breed, for example,
right.
Just by culling. Actually, I guess cats are the more likely to be culled, so you'll be able to select for certain.
Is this game so far living up to your sort of your hope that you will be able to play it as a game and not be bored by it because it's not a plot-driven game? Is it sort of living up to that, or do you not play
it? It's getting there. I mean, I've played a lot of Fortress mode, and I'm really looking forward to Adventure mode getting to the point where you can do that. Because I've always, I mean, just in general, I've always been more of a more of a one character, kind of less strategy, more RPG type thing, kind of. And so that'll kind of, I mean, I'll definitely be playing a lot of adventurers when we get more mechanics in, and probably playing
adventure mode right now is just sort of like a big way to see how flawed everything is.
Just not there right now.
Yeah.
Kind of a.
Do you ever think you'll actually get to a version 2? Because
I don't know. I don't know, right? Because I think I'll get to version 1. You know, this is assuming I'm continuing to be supported and so on, because it's really impossible to judge how that's all going to work out. But in terms of my own motivation and that kind of thing, I'm definitely not all for getting to version 1, but also in terms of how it's going, I'm definitely going to make it there. It's going to take a while.
So,
After that, yeah, who knows? Who knows?
What if, like, one guy donated, like, $1 million? What would you do for him? Like, make the best crayon art in the world?
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. It's like, what strings would you allow someone to attach for something like that? If it actually came through, if it actually was sitting there in your bank account, came through, can't be reversed, you don't anticipate that there's going to be a lawsuit or anything, if you actually got the money, right? Would you distort your game in any significant way? You know, if the guy's like, we absolutely need to have shit everywhere in this game, and then I'll give you $1 million. It's like, you know, I wouldn't do that because I wouldn't enjoy working on that. And I don't really have any aspirations money.
If you just wanted, like, one of those little text stories that you did.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, we probably, what we do then is, Zach has been writing those lately, is probably just have Zach, I mean, if the guy gave us $1 million, probably have Zach work on a story for a month or something, yeah. write a story, and then he's like, if he wanted another chapter, we'd probably write him one, too.
So would you still continue the same sort of lifestyle if you got a donation like that, and just...
I would have health insurance. I would probably have other things too. I mean, there would. It's not like I don't have anything to do with money, but at the same time, it's not like I'd suddenly take a big trip around the world for 100 days and just ignore my game.
Yeah, because
that's
like,
what I,
you would still
you, know.
You would still continue working on the game, right?
Just, absolutely, yeah. 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 No, there's nothing else I got to do.
But
you know,
be
this
set
is it.
Well.
It depends, but I certainly wouldn't mind having some money. I like money. It's good to have money to eat and stuff and pay your rent and that kind of thing.
I don't have money.
Yeah, well, I don't really either, but I've got some money. I mean, I'm making some money. It's enough to make ends meet, about. I mean, I lost $2,000 last year total, I think, when it all came down to it. And this year's, I mean, who knows, because... I mean, I'm planning whether I have to cut stuff or not to get a release out this year. So that should lead to an increase in donations. Now, if for whatever reason there's for some reason not a release, then this will be a crappy year most likely.
Yeah.
Compared to last year, because I mean, I'll probably end up with $20,000 instead of $30,000, and then, well, that means that I'll probably have lost, you know, $5,000-$7,000, and then I will start having to raid my retirement that I got during the 2 years during my math job and so on. And, cause I managed to save up some money at my math job, cause I was living like I am now. I didn't, you know, they were paying me some number of thousands of, I don't even remember anymore. It was not 40,000, was it? It was something I felt happy about. But I was still living like a grad student at the time, as I'm living now. And, so I managed to save enough money so that if things go badly, I can still kick around for a couple years.
Would you ever go back to, a math job for a bit if money was tight, since you still have a PhD?
I have a PhD, and that could probably, I'm uncertain about this, I haven't really looked into it, but that could probably get me a job at a community college or as a math teacher, even without the educational components of those jobs. I'm uncertain. Certainly the community college, I think I could get a job, but getting back into math research would be virtually impossible. I need to publish a paper first. That'd be hard, because I need to take out, you know, a lot of time to get back into things, and you know, it's difficult. But it's possible I go back and get a teaching job, because I don't have a lot of skills, and you know, I don't know if anyone would hire me for a computer job or whatever, because I don't have a lot of skill there.
I am horrible at math, by the way.
All right.
I'm just really bad, but I'm good at English. That's my thing.
That's right. So you got a talent. And it's important to have a talent.
But getting back to Dwarf Fortress. So, is this the only project that you can see you doing? I mean, besides your like month end sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, the month end projects are. Our projects, whatever. Sometimes it changes, but the you know, it's not like they're insignificant things. That's the reason it takes so long. I mean, really, any game, if you let it get out of control, it can be like Dwarf Fortress, right? It's like you just add shit to it. So they're the scope of those games is also pretty large. So no. I mean, I definitely see myself working on other things. Always having Dwarf Fortress there. Always having Dwarf Fortress being the primary thing, but let's say I manage to get a month-end project out, then the month-end period would probably be devoted to the public support of that project, whether that's continued writing or just making sure the bugs are out and so on. So there's you know, I can definitely see myself devoting 10 days a month or something to different things.
Right.
Especially if they're popular. I mean, I can definitely see the month-end projects being as big as Dwarf Fortress, because they cater to a whole different sorts of people and so on.
I mean, Dwarf Fortress, hopefully, if you ever actually, like, get everything done that you want to, this will be, like, the most amazing game ever made. Whoa.
Yeah, if it runs fast and it has enough graphics to attract people to say it was amazing enough, yeah.
Well, hopefully, by the time this is done, people will have good enough computers to actually run all this crap that you're adding.
Yeah, I'd hate to have that to be the thing I'm relying on, because there's a lot of optimizations to do, but it's true that
the computer I'm on now, which is a decent computer, it's good. It's just, it has trouble with Dwarf Fortress for some reason. I don't know. It's like some computers, like, what I noticed is that my really high-end computer has a little bit of trouble with Dwarf Fortress for some reason. And then, like, I went to the library and I played it on there, and the library computer had no problem running it.
And now, have you tried the new, like, 4D11 or whatever version on your new computer?
I don't actually know. To tell you the truth.
Because that's kind of the point here, is that with the newer computers, because of how my OpenGL stuff was written, newer graphics cards will actually run the game slower, because portions of OpenGL were deprecated or whatever.
Oh, well, that's probably.
And they no longer support the whole begin-end routine there. And
Because I got like a completely new beastly graphics card, so that's probably...
Yeah, and there's also differences between NVIDIA and ATI. ATI tended to support it better, but still everything's getting phased out.
They're geared towards crisis and FPSs and... Crazy
thing. Yeah. I mean, to print simple shit on the screen, now you have to run it through vertex buffers and stuff, and it's crazy what you have to do simple games on OpenGL now. But those things have been done by people who aren't me. Bon did that stuff, and also Mr. Hellier. I don't know how to pronounce anyone's name, because no one's ever talked to me in real life.
Can you pronounce my name?
Veroil did some stuff. Your name. Let me try and read it. Languidier.
Yay! For some reason,
Languidier.
Yeah. For some reason, a lot of people say like Languidor, and I'm like, wait, there's no O's.
Where the hell does that come from? Yeah, this has got the double I. Double I. Double I.
Or like Languidor, like they don't say the double I, which which, as you should know, if you know good English, is an E sound. I don't know. People...
Although you don't see it that often, though.
Yeah.
So you can excuse
people.
It's
more of a German type thing.
Yeah.
Which is what the name is supposed to be. It's supposed to be like a German sort of alias. I don't know where the zombie came from. I think like... Because usually I just write it Languidier Z, Kamenev. But yeah, when people ask me what my middle name is, I'm like, oh, I don't know. I guess it's just Z. But it is technically zombie, because I was a zombie for a while.
Now Skype has it all written out, so I didn't have to guess.
Because the Languidier guy is actually a character that I have, because I'm an author sort of guy. He's got a personality, and he's also my alias, so...
That's right.
Yes, he's got a gun for an arm, so that's pretty cool.
Gun? What's a gun? Got no guns in Dwarf Fortress. Although guns before electricity, most likely.
Yeah.
Guns before steampunk, most likely.
Are we going to have, like, cannons and muskets at one point?
It is possible that this will be an optional mechanic, because it certainly fits the time frame.
Yeah.
It's more a matter of mood than time frame for me.
Right.
And also, there's this issue of range, right? I mean, we already have crossbows and bows and stuff, but the more you rely on ranged weapons, the less the whole interface makes sense, because everything's in close quarters.
Right. Well, I mean, weapons at this point, especially in adventure mode, they just rape you.
Yeah, well, they are still, they're still bad, especially, well, in dwarf mode too, right, because you get that whole crossbow effect.
Yeah.
But in adventure mode, all you're seeing is that crossbow effect in slow motion as you do your moves or whatever.
Well, yeah, because...
But no, that's all going to be fixed.
In adventure mode, the big thing is, not only does it do a lot of damage, you can't see where the guy is. It's like, oh no, I'm just trying to destroy your entire town. Why are you shooting at me?
Yeah, you wonder why.
Darn you, legendary crossbow man.
Yeah. Well. So Scamps. Like I said, he tore this headset apart, right?
Yeah.
So that includes the big padding that was on the ear. So my ear is starting to kill me. It's been 3 hours and 20 minutes. So you should probably wind it down.
No, you have to a little bit longer for this. I've already planned the time spent just a little bit.
It has a time limit.
Well, I wanted it to be long but not unbearably. So
I don't know what's bearable because right now it's at 320.
another thing is I wanted it to be so long that I forgot most of it, so I would be able to listen to it later.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna have to leave around 9 o'clock anyway, but we can. It's only 8:30 now.
Yes, you have to talk to me. There's no choice here. I will I will murder your family. No, but...
let's not do that.
I'm kidding.
They got nothing to do with nothing.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Am I...
How could you be kidding? I heard what you do in adventure mode and shit. Do all your cats and shit.
I might, all the psychotic stuff.
I might
nickname some dwarves after your family and then have them die. No, I won't do that. I might send hateful letters, but that's about it. I was going to say something about Dwarf Fortress. There's, I can probably think of something else to say.
Well, that is one requirement here, so there's got to be people talking for this last part.
There's no dead air. So how about them dwarves? They have, like, these beards and things.
Yeah, no, it's intriguing. In the next version, they'll be all braided and...
Oh,
and
there
will
have be
beards lengths and stuff,
there will be
and
beard styles in this next version.
Yeah. There's all kinds of crap in this next version. I mean, there's too much. They've done so much.
Will dwarves like think differently of other dwarves based on their beard length or style?
Not right now, but right now there are cultural restrictions, and the only cultural restriction with a dwarf is that you got to have a beard.
Even the females, right? Yeah.
Well, that's actually something I've left optional in the Raws. I put in exactly what you need to stick a beard on a female, and you just have to put the bracket in.
Right.
But we had no real precedence or reason for. I mean, the thing with bearded dwarven females, people seem to think that's the standard notion, but the standard notion is no females at all, and we don't really want to have that because because you got to humanize them to make the game fun or whatever, or to make the game compelling in any way. So then the question of whether or not they had beards, well, it's actually totally up in the air. So we just decided to leave it up to people
do dwarves actually get drunk at all, or do they just hold? No, they will.
It'll be a scary thing when they do because they drink all the freaking time. But right now, drinking when they don't drink, their performance slows. And that's what that message,
so
when it talks about the message,
so
about
sober, you know, is like drunk for them.
Yeah. It's kind of like the drinking is sort of like a stimulant instead, or something like coffee or something. So then they'll become sluggish if they don't have it.
For people with ADD, like drinking coffee makes them more calm or whatever.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I know weird things like Ritalin has the opposite effect on people that don't have ADD or whatever, and makes them all wired. All this strange stuff, I don't understand how it works.
Dwarves ever have like weird neuroses like that? I think like
well, they're already kind of weird, and they can have really extreme personalities right now. But specific neuroses, there is plans a little bit on the dev page for that, mostly related to brain damage.
Right.
It's like if someone gets their brain damaged,
will there ever be like a schizophrenic or like a pathological liar type of guy?
I would hope he's just got a maxed out
lying skill and he just lies all the time about everything.
Yeah, well, he doesn't even need to be good at it. Yeah, because right now the personality, like I was saying, the personality for lying, when you max that out, that doesn't really mean that they lie all the time. That means that they think lies are kind of perfectly okay and kind of part of what you do when you're talking to people. So it's not really a value judgment.
Yeah, well, I tamed 3 elephants today.
Yeah, I mean,
version, it would be I tamed 3 carps today.
Yeah, I mean, part of it isn't even about bragging, though. I mean, part of it is just about, like I was saying, letting people down easy. Like, do you flat out tell someone their mother's dead or whatever? Do you lie to them about it for a while?
Your cat is missing.
Yeah. Or when you go in, or even stuff like you walk into a room and someone's got a cat and it's really ugly, and you're like, you know, that's a really wonderful cat you've got there.
That's a beautiful cat coated with.
That's
vomit.
A beautiful child. that kind of thing. I mean, that sort of thing. It's like someone has the blunt personality. They'll go in and be like, "Oh, that child is butt ugly," but you don't say that to people in general. So I mean, a lot of people don't have this extreme.
It's like instead of saying like, I killed your child, you could say a kobold snatcher took your child.
Well, yeah, it's somewhat different, but it's kind of a thing. I mean, I imagine people, I'm trying to put no value judgments inside of the personalities, so I think, I mean, there are things like lazy and stuff where there are certain value judgments associated, perhaps, depending on your culture and so on, but with the lying one, I think if you had maxed out your lying in your personality, that's kind of these kind of people that would be all saccharine and smoozy with each other and never actually talk about what's actually going on.
Oh, yeah.
And just kind of have all these euphemisms and evasions and stuff. But it's not.
Speaking of like different personalities and stuff, is there any significance to there being 7 dwarves at the beginning?
Absolutely. You know the story.
Yeah. But if we had these personality traits, wouldn't it be possible to have all of the 7 dwarves?
It's quite possible, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's got everything in there that defines the 7 dwarves, because I don't even remember what they are. I mean, no one's sleepy or whatever, for example.
Dopey.
Dopey. Well, there can be dopey in the next version, because I've got intelligence traits, even though they aren't used in a lot of places.
Do you have
drugs? What is there, a drug dwarf? I don't remember Snow White that well.
As dopey, just reminded me. Because I know in like the Wild West they had like cocaine and opium and stuff.
Yeah, we need more drugs in the game.
Yes, and you should be able to harvest them in farms.
Yeah, I know there's a bloat for smoking stuff, but yeah.
Is there going to be like a city that is just so big and so just full of horrible people? It's like this big den of crime and scum and villainy. Will that be possible?
You mean the fortress that you've managed, or one in general?
No, like a human city that's so just like big, huge, horrible New York type place.
Yeah, so we've been talking about this on the forums a bit. The idea of having sites broken into sections, the idea of abstract populations, so that you know, an army of 200,000 could be fielded, and most of what the fighting looks like is like those Civil War fights with the, where it shows the bars and stuff, and then you do, so you do it from way far away,
yeah,
and kind of organize overall tactics, and then you can zoom in on a specific fight if you want. But having, see, there's the largest cities in antiquity, I don't know, maybe a million people or something. Someone mentioned Rome having a million people at its peak. And so the question would be, how do you have a city with a million people and still keep some of the most compelling things about the game in, with individual personalities and histories and so on? And I think it's possible. You never have a million people on screen at once. You're always just kind of either walking around or whatever. So it's not like it's the processor load is any different necessarily.
But I mean, what I was asking was, will there actually be like a horrible town full of villains and criminals and big underworld?
So do you mean as a portion of the town?
No,
or I mean, a town itself, like some kind of bandits town or something?
Yeah,
because that's all. Yeah, no, we're all for bandits. We're going to have bandits raiding the cave, the caravans as soon as they're created. And with the adventure entities as well, but before then, most likely are it's hard to say, really, because we want to do adventure skills, but the places where the bandits live would be like a bandit's place.
Right.
Now, they might all be all goody-two-shoes like Robin Hood's bandit place, or they could be a really scummy bandit's place. You need stuff like that to add texture to the game.
Especially
if your adventurer is allowed to be a criminal, you don't want him to be all alone.
You go into a town as an adventurer and, like, your sword gets stolen or something?
there's a larger question here too. It's like, if you create your own house and you arrange things exactly how you want and you place little things on the tables, like all the rings that I've taken from various places, I'll put them on the ring table, and all the weapons, I'll put my own weapon rack and stuff, and then you leave your house for 6 months to go on an adventure. When you come back, what should you expect to find there?
Yeah, like if somebody
nothing
somebody burgles your house.
Yeah, so but those kind of things are things that should be really carefully handled, and certainly with init options and stuff, because some people want to be able to preserve their legacy in a way.
It could be like they come back and like everything's been knocked over, like there's some sort of animal, and then they're like, oh.
I think this was
an old man based on this.
Slime on the wall. Yeah, this nasty. Yeah,
based
slime.
On this old man sign right here.
Oh, God. Yeah, not the old man sign. That's true. I don't want to think about this sign too much, but yeah, you could walk back to your house and have someone shit on your bed. You never know.
Just some random guy, not even an animal.
Yeah, we don't want the humans to degenerate that much, but...
Oh,
yeah, who knows how elves handle it, because if they're trying to be all connected to nature, then they don't need to have a special place for the potty, really.
But will human towns ever have gibbering madmen in them? Like, you walk up to somebody and you try to talk to them, and they're just like...
Yeah, I mean, they don't have enough reasons to go crazy right now like the dwarves do, but it's the kind of thing that you add over time. When we add mental illnesses to come from brain injuries, for example, probably one of the earlier ones to come about, then most likely anyone who's had issues in world generation, like getting clubbed in the head by a cyclops and still managing to get away, could be that person.
Old crazy war veterans on the streets with no legs.
That's right. They got no way. Right now they crawl around. They don't have like a little cart they can move on or something. It's really horrible how they kind of crawl. Just crawl with their arms. Crawl.
I mean, dwarves have a lot of reasons to go crazy because their fortresses are just horrible.
Yeah. Especially when they got people managing them that are just turning them into cat butcher mills and then shoving people under bridges too. It's like squashing snails under a stone or something like a little kid.
Will
disgusting.
Dwarves actually try to commit suicide?
Dwarves right now don't actively commit suicide. What they do is ignore the surroundings so that a crazy dwarf will just step into the magma or leap off a cliff. But there's no notion of an active suicide.
So nobody's like slitting their wrists with an axe or anything.
Not at this point, and I wonder how that would go over. But there is a whole sphere of suicide right now, and people tell you when you talk to them, it's like, when you get up in the morning, please consider suicide. And so we've already kind of crossed all of the ethical bounds as far as getting a lawyer sicked on us or something. So I don't see why we wouldn't have dwarves killing themselves or whatever. Plus, that is a part of a lot of dramatic stories as well, and a lot of mythological stories involve suicide. It's not something that you should necessarily shirk away from.
So if all this like sort of dramatic stuff is happening, like, oh, I lost my cat or baby or whatever, and then I committed suicide, well, would there be like some fort that's just so dramatic and detailed that it could actually be turned into a play? Like Hamlet?
Yeah, well, see, kind of the pie in the sky thing again is that,
yeah.
You would be able to take your fortress and have those legends read a lot better about it. So that when you pick your fortress, instead of just giving you a list of historical events and years, it could come up with a narrative. Now that's very difficult, but certain aspects of that aren't so difficult, especially as they involve game mechanics that are all established in certain ways, so that it doesn't have to reconstruct a narrative from scratch, but it knows a bit more about what's going on.
Did you ever finish that XML dump thing yet?
What have I done? I think, let me go look up something.
I apologize for blowing that as loudly in your ear.
Yeah, no, it didn't actually come out that loud. I got some kind of cap. Okay, right here, under the handle, a few miscellaneous bug reports and minor interface requests that have interface requests that have arisen, there is a section here called at least consider an XML dump of all the legends stuff, even if it takes the processor forever to do it, because it would. That is something that is on the table still, but it is something that I promised to consider for whoever requested it back when I'm doing the end of this release.
Because, like the Dark Diamond interviewer said, I could totally read that, like, on the toilet or whatever. even the guy who was born and was a soap maker and died.
it's cool. I mean, it's good. I was kind of surprised, actually. I wasn't sure how well received that would be when I did the world generated release. There's all kinds of things going on in here. So are you stuck in a hallway or something?
No,
people pass through.
Yeah, I'm in the living room.
That's cool. So the XML thing is definitely something up for consideration.
People have like made pretty good stories off of that legends thing, haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of gives you a backbone, and then you can kind of talk about what's happened. But it's a lot more rewarding when you actually sit there and follow up everyone's story and so on. You have to do a lot of work right now, which is part of the problem.
Yeah.
Because that interface needs to be made a lot better for it to really kind of take wing, but whatever. So that you can just click on someone and know what they're related to and see how their story relates to it and so on. And
what I thought was the most interesting in Legends was there was like this big monster that kept going around and killing stuff, and like then it said that people started worshipping it, and I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. that's just a trigger that happens on the polytheistic civilizations, the ones that can admit more gods or whatever. That when a mega beast or power attacks them, then that has a chance of sparking small superstitions, which is what the lowest religious numbers represent for that beast, and then the faith increases over time as people pass their religions on to their children. So a person who gets attacked by a dragon once, he might develop some kind of superstition for it, like just having a little dragon idol in his house.
Right.
That he stops and prays to, whatever, but doesn't really think of it in the same way as he thinks of his actual gods and his civilization and so on. But then his kid might pick up on that, you know, and it kind of applies a random number to the faith number every time there's a child indoctrinated into a new religion, that it kind of wiggles the number. So over time, any bounded number between 0 and 100, like the faith number, over a large enough number of generations, it'll hit any extreme if it's bouncing around. And so over time, you'll get people who are just fervently members of the dragon cult or whatever that arose because a few people were placing idols.
You have to place 20,000 idols in every room of your house.
Hopefully the superstition will also diversify, but if it doesn't, that's exactly what you'd get.
Will there be sort of sects of these randomly generated religions? Like one of them thinks that you should punch your dragon idol every day, and one of them thinks that you should kiss it every day or whatever?
Yeah, there's the notion. See, we have this religion thing, like you were mentioning before, is totally not fleshed out, right?
Yeah.
It's bad. It's just kind of there. But the idea is, and this is up on DevNext, is a notion of schism. And to have a schism, you need not necessarily just a fight over leadership, although I guess that could cause one, but you also need a difference in interpretation or whatever, a difference in rules, or a difference in the overall sense of the religion as you're taking it, for a schism to take root in the population or whatever.
I
so
think
there's,
the dragon was trying to repent us of our sins. No, I think the dragon was just trying to kill us.
Yeah, no, it'd be interesting if people eventually came around to interpret the dragon as a benevolent entity.
Yeah.
Especially if it were still alive and just hadn't come back yet, and then it comes it's back like, to visit after everyone's worshipping as a peaceful god.
Like the dragon comes back, and since dragons are pretty intelligent, it's like sees all these people like bowing down to it, and it's like, what is going on here? I don't get this.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be in terror.
Yeah, because it'd be interesting to have a religion develop a notion of the second coming of the dragon and see how well it lines up when the dragon actually does come a second time. But
it'd be like people sitting in basements drawing magic circles, like, oh, we must summon the dragon.
Yeah, that should be cool, and it ties into all that ritual stuff I was talking about before. When I can get that started, it's around the same time I'll be fixing meetings. It's kind of weird, but that's just how it is.
Meetings.
Meetings, people screaming at their boss and stuff. And also be able to start doing guilds and stuff again there.
Yeah, guilds. The
guilds are fun.
Like the crafted dwarves guild.
Yeah,
it's kind of like a union, isn't it?
That's the notion. I mean, if you craft something, then the idea is to stop export or stop imports from faraway places that could interfere with your trade, and so on. I was reading about this when I was doing dyes, like just the different. There was a big thing with guilds stopping the import of dyes from India into Europe. Because indigo was so cheap or whatever over there, and it was about to screw up all these, all the woad guys or whatever, but I don't remember the details, but that's the kind of thing that the guilds would be all about.
More
nobles to screw up your merchant trade, that's right. Put a tariff on the import of weapons from other places when you have a weapons guild or whatever.
The whole dwarf thing turns into like a different game once you get all the nobles.
Yeah, and hopefully it would be a better game rather than a worse game. Which is not a hurdle we've jumped over yet, but we're working on it.
Damn you, all you purple nobles.
Yeah, there's so much hate with the nobles, and it's all justified. It's horrible. It's like right now, it's just a revolution simulator or whatever.
Yeah, you should be able to like have a coup and just overthrow all the nobles.
Yeah, the very first step of that is actually coming with the next release when they come after your fortress has attained certain levels of wealth and prestige and so on. Through its works and its population and its wealth, overall wealth number or whatever, the liaison will come and say, the king wants to reward you for your efforts, and so is going to raise you up into an actual barony. and so we need a Baron. And, you know, if he doesn't want to send over his inbred brother or whatever to be the Baron, which won't happen right now, he actually picks a dwarf. You know, you guys deserve credit. And people, you know, people were made Barons. They didn't come from just inbred families or whatever. So you get to, especially in dwarves, it makes sense, because dwarves are all about talent.
Utilitarian type of
that's
thing.
Right, especially drinking. Yeah. But so you'd get to pick one. But the interesting thing about this mechanic, related to what we were just talking about, is that you can also refuse the offer. And refusing the offer is bad, of course, because the king likes to have nobles, because nobles help him control his dominion. So when you refuse, that's kind of an act of rebellion. Now, what that would have is you just not getting liaison making trade agreements anymore or whatever. So the liaison, basically, his purpose is not to give you trade agreements; it's to come to get you to change your mind every year. It's like, are you sure you don't want a Baron? Are you sure you don't want a Baron?
And stand right next to you while you're like.
Yeah, just kind of breathing down your neck while you're sleeping. He's like, are you sure you don't want a Baron? He's like trying to do like suggestion while you're sleeping or whatever. What would actually, I guess, end up happening is you'd kind of turn to the humans then for your trade needs, not that you don't already. And in that way, I mean, it might kind of lead to, once we get armies moving around the maps and stuff, it might lead to kind of a dwarf-human alliance or whatever against your old homeland. And there's all kinds of cool things that'll be able to happen once we've got armies moving around the map.
Oh, yeah.
Because in terms of the fantasy...
If you ever do end up putting in toilets, then he'll be right next to you while you're using it.
Yeah, it's just too much trouble. But so the cool thing about once the armies are in is kind of armies, in especially in a fantasy game, armies are practically the whole language of diplomacy and international relations.
Okay.
So doing that will allow all that kind of stuff I was talking about allegiances and
Tell you to. No. Well, then I'll send my army over there.
That's right. And it's all they're all different races and stuff, so there's not nearly as much quarter as there would be with humans.
Then of course the army just ends up standing around outside your fortress.
yeah, they're not really proactive. They're not, but they're coming. They're coming. Before we get all the armies moving around and stuff, at least your armies, they'll be sieging a little bit better. So,
will you ever be able to sort of? Stage a siege on like a goblin tower?
You mean from dwarf mode send out guys to siege a goblin tower?
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's coming after improved sieges. That is the next army arc goal. And yeah, the idea is first you'd be able to send out patrols, be able to raid the kobold caves, be able to raid the, and then be able to mount a large attack. Now, the attacks could be quite large, because once we get these abstract populations going, you'd have your fort becomes, over time, more like the keep in the center of an abstracted region. And that's a general idea. Now, this is not completely fleshed out. And so if you'd have your important dwarves that you still manage down to the details in the keep, and then you have the rest of the surrounding areas, which are either deeper in the mountain or off in hills and places and so on. But you'd be able to draft, say, 10,000 people from the surrounding regions and from any other places that owe you their allegiance or just helping you out for the sake of the larger civilization. And then you could lead an army of 10,000 against a goblin tower. And then it would also be able to field similar armies. And you would have armies, attacks like I was describing, like those Civil War documentaries or whatever, with just it shows the large terrain zooming back on the world map a bit,
yeah.
Kind of that mid-level thing where you drop your fort down, that local map it shows. You can have little bars on that and so on, and have the armies kind of do different tactics and so on. You could zoom in, and then when you finally take the goblin tower, you could fight their last resistance completely zoomed in, like dwarf mode or something. So you have a bunch of squads there, and you try and take the final tower.
Would you be able to, like, attack humans and elves and things?
Everybody.
Yay. Even your own
at your own risk, sure. And whether or not, and what your dwarves think of that is a different question. You could very well start a civil war within your own fortress when you make decisions like that, and I would have no problem if you suddenly
sort of like a Declaration of Independence sort of thing.
Yeah, with the Tories and so on, causing the loyalists, causing trouble for you, and sabotaging your levers and stuff. And,
yeah, you know, they start another fortress right across from you. It's like...
Yeah, so it's all cool. I mean, it's not far away because of the, because armies are the thing that get it all started. Armies being the language of diplomacy until we have a different language. Which will involve caravans and actual diplomats and so on. So we're getting there. We're getting there. Yeah.
Give me this, or I will fuck you up.
So how are we doing? I got numerous things going on. Coming up at 9 here, and my cat's been locked out for 4 hours. Yeah. It's probably gonna sever that relationship with me pretty soon.
About 10 more minutes here.
So you're trying to hit 4 hours? Is that what we're going for?
Yeah.
All right, no, I'll go to 4 hours. I can go to 4 hours. Then I gotta go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfectly
yeah.
Understandable. But with these with these armies, would they ever like disobey you if they didn't like the situation? They just sort of ran away.
I think a mutiny is a good idea. But aside from that, just the notion of disobeying could be coming up in this version, in the sense that there's going to be a whole new training regime, in where you can drill formations, you can do different sparring routines, you can just drill with your weapons, and these things, especially drilling formations, build your squad coherence, and they also build things like the leadership skills of the captains leading the groups. And so if you assign someone completely incompetent to an untrained squad and tell them to go someplace, first of all, they're not going to like line up perfectly for you. There's going to be this hodgepodge as they currently are. And, like in the current version, they look like crap when they line up. They just go to cluster around places and stuff. And when they get attacked, you know, if someone's like, hold your position, it's like, who's going to listen to that, right? It's like they have no experience with that. And they, you know, there's the issue of, you know, when you have attacks now, it's not about an engagement on the field, but it's like someone coming to kill their families. So it's more likely that they'll still obey orders in general, but right. Especially as we move on, it'll happen more and more that they might refuse to take 7 guys and enter that kobold cave that they have no idea what's in there except a bunch of horrible poisonous insects and stuff.
So, like, if you have an area between you and like the fortress that you're attacking or whatever, will you like go to a field in between them and try to battle over territory or whatever?
Yeah. And I mean, I have to look up a little bit why battles happen in fields and how armies met each other and stuff, how scouts work, why people form battle lines and so on
I know why they form battle lines with with muskets, because they're so like inaccurate that they had to line up.
Yeah, and I know there's things to do with flanking and so on. It always just seemed kind of weird to me that people meet on the field of battle or whatever. It just seems like such an unlikely thing.
It's also like a matter of the weird sort of British like honor system.
Well, that's the part I was trying to avoid, because almost none of the races, except maybe the dwarves, would have that concept. So I want to figure out the practical aspects of it eventually. But
dwarves, like at the same time the most advanced and yet like the most horrible race.
They're horrible simply because of the power acting through them and manifesting itself through them. That's all your fault. But the question was something about fields, whether or not they'd meet on. You'd be moving an army as an adventurer moves practically over the world map and so on.
Right.
I mean, the largest armies might even occupy more than one world map square. There's real no sense of scale right now, so it's hard to say how big one of those squares is.
That reminds me of, there was this really interesting fortress that was generated recently on the forums, and it was a pocket dimension, but it was bisected perfectly by an ocean.
I saw that thread. There were no pictures of last I checked.
It
kind of put the bad on the bottom and the good on the top, or the other way around or something.
Yeah. Something like that. Well,
yeah,
I thought that was pretty cool. But then, how are you going to like make them interact at all?
Yeah. That's where boats come in, right? And so.
Will there be naval warfare?
It would be cool, wouldn't it? I mean, I've been thinking quite a bit about that, because someone had someone brought up boats again in one of those threads, and I actually popped into the suggestion thread and talked about, you know, how we were thinking of doing boats with the four directions, but being able to move more directions than that, and so on. And that would involve things like boat warfare. And it would certainly be fun to be like a pirate in adventure mode or something. Have your little boat that you take around and do various things with and stop at different ports. And there's all kinds of cool things that can be done with boats. And, they're not that hard.
Stow away on one to reach another town.
Yeah. Just stow away, like my ancestors or whatever, yeah. just kind of do all kinds of things.
Yeah, will there be, like, ferries and stuff that you can pay to go to another town overseas?
Yeah. I'm not sure what the kind of precedents are for ferries. Like, overseas, if you call that a ferry, like on a long voyage, but they're gonna, I mean, there could be all kinds of boats, right? There's those ones that you just kind of hang onto a rope across a river and stand on a raft and just kind of go along, or, a couple of my brother's stories online have involved punting, using a stick and pushing yourself along
with
a boat, and so there's small craft like that, and then there's larger ones. I'm not sure what the precedents are as far as naval technology up to 1400, but it must be pretty good because 90 years later they were discovering continents and stuff, and going around the world.
So will it be like caravels or like Viking ships?
That's what I'm saying. I really don't have a good handle on the technology of the times and so on, but anything up to 1400 in any country in the world, fair game as far as checking it out. And
Viking ships were pretty advanced for their time. They could go, like, anywhere.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess they made it across, across the Atlantic. I don't remember the current historical thought on Eric the Red or whatever, that kind of thing, making it to North America. But, we're all for that kind of stuff. All for it, having giant ships.
Well, there's not really, like, continents at the moment, are there? There's sometimes islands, but...
Yeah. You have a choice. I mean, world generation gives you a choice. It's a little difficult to work with, but you can produce more islands than are currently visible, or you can just have a sea that cuts the map half in half and just kind of moves from the edge to the center. But even in situations like that, like thinking of the Caribbean, for example, had huge amounts of boat activity just because it's way easier than going around. so any time you've got any type of shape like that with water separating land in any way, even if it's not a total separation, there should be boat activity.
Will there be more options for, like, what kind of world you want to generate? Like, I want to generate an archipelago or, like, whatever.
Right now those options exist in the sense that it's possible to define the altitude variations on a grid and so on, so that you can do pretty much a lot of things like that. However, for user friendliness, there should be a lot of preset kind of options and ways to set up a world so that you can get what you want without having to get a degree in it first. Because right now it's really painful to set up world generation.
Will there ever be like a world's editor type thing?
Yeah, definitely. Right now we've got the painter, which is crap. The world map painter, I don't know if you've seen it. It's in the current version, that's already online. You can just paint the altitude, temperature, rainfall, all that kind of stuff. But of course, that hasn't gotten a lot of use because, you can't play cities and stuff. And so that's the idea. The idea is that you would be able to place cities, named historical figures. You'd even be able to give them a history if you want, so that it doesn't go through world generation, but it already has the history. And then you'd probably start seeing more things from books and so on, people generating their favorite book, drawing up the map, putting their favorite characters in, putting their favorite cities in, and modding in whatever races they need.
Doing like a miniature Earth type thing.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the ideas we were thinking it would be used for, is to pick a time period on Earth and drop a map of Earth, and then just put the different civilizations in and at their different technology levels. You probably wouldn't want to go in and add the history of Earth because that would just be tedious.
Right.
But you could do some events so that people could talk.
Put in all the legends. Their religion.
Yeah, you could put in the religions. You could put in, you know, the fact that the god is monotheistic and does not really interfere directly that often, and all that kind of thing. And then you could either run it from there, or if you wanted to, you could just also let World Generation run with it for like 200 years to kind of give you a slightly alternate Earth or whatever. So there's all kinds of things that'll rise out of it, so we'll be happy to do that at some point.
Okay, well, we're at 3:58 right now, so we might as well start wrapping up here.
Yeah, I think this is the longest one. I think this might be the longest podcast ever. Pretty long.
Ever made. 4 hours. It's like two podcasts.
Well, yeah, so you're gonna hopefully it saves and stuff.
Right.
Always sucks when the files disappear, but
anyway,
yeah.
It was good talking with you, Mr. Dr. Adams.
Yeah, no, it's been fun.
So hopefully I will maybe talk to you later. But yes, have fun.
Yeah, we'll have to see how this goes over with your fan base and your thread.
Right. I can't listen to 4 hours of just you talking.
Yeah, I don't know who plays Dwarf Fortress in there, if anybody.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm gonna as soon as you post it, I'll link it, so you'll get all my people over there anyway.
Good. Well, yes, it was a good time. You have fun making this amazing game that you're making at this.
Yeah, it should be entertaining. First, I've got to reconcile with my cat.
Oh, poor Scamps.
Horse camps.
So, I'll see you later.
Okay, cool. All right.
Goodbye.
Bye.